believe that yesterday we'll ask the dwarf to respond to the issues that we held over yesterday. Am I not audible at the back? Okay. We'll ask dwarf to respond to the issues that we asked to be held over yesterday. And then we'll go over to the rest of the agenda. We'll start it with the Cello, and they can say they are on the side already, and then the Makwa, are they here? Makwa? Yes, not the Makwa. Oh, it is not the Makwa. Maybe they share. Then the TCPA, and then there's the RAN water that we will be having. Ms. Schreiner, welcome. I take it you're going to kick off of what we asked yesterday and the subject is fully being briefed. You will clarify all those matters that have not been clarified, and you will not take us off a garden path that we were yesterday, but will take us to prosperity. Over to you, Ms. Schreiner.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that I'm going to be able to answer the questions. There are some questions to which I think we would have to provide a fuller reply in writing to the committee. And I hope that I have the, having not been here, I hope that I do have the questions captured correctly. The first issue, as I understand it, was an issue around a compliance of water boards with the PFMA and the MFMA. And overall, most of the water boards are complying with most of the PFMA and MFMA requirements, but certainly not with all of them. I know that one of the issues that the committee was concerned about was that we shouldn't repeat the debacle of last year's tariff issue. This year we managed to get all the submissions in from the water boards on time by the 25th of January and all into Parliament on time. I think the key challenge that we're having is on the quarterly reporting. In relation to the shareholders' compact. In fact, only four water boards are complying on a regular basis with the quarterly reports that are required. There have been letters sent to the water boards reminding them of their responsibility in this regard and ensuring that they, requesting them to ensure that they do in fact comply. So we will follow up on that in the next quarterly period, and hopefully compliance will now certainly improve, and we will follow up on any water boards that don't comply with that. In terms of Section 41 of the MFMA, Ikangale is the one water board that is not complying with that. Compliance with the MFMA is in fact the responsibility of National Treasury and not of the department, but we do interact with National Treasury around the issues when we pick them up or they pick them up. There was an issue raised around the corporate social investment in the advertising functions, and Chair, I think this is possibly a question that should be asked to the water boards as to why they are spending money on these functions. It's an issue that has only recently surfaced, and an issue that we actually need to explore further in terms of why this is happening and what kinds of sums of money are going into it. The five-year business plans, 11 water boards submitted their business plans to the minister. Albany Coast, Ikangala, Namakwa and Pilladrift Water, which are very small water boards, did not submit their business plans. The delays being apparently due to non-completion of Section 78 processes by the water services authorities in their area. But we will follow up and ensure that all water boards in fact do submit as required. RAF does an analysis of the business plans annually, and we can make this available to the portfolio committee if you would like to see that information. There was a question around borrowing limits. The borrowing limits are determined by National Treasury. Only Mgeni and Mfatuzi Water have requested in the past to borrow more than the set limit, and there is a process that is followed through the Minister of Water Affairs and Forestry and the Guarantee Certification Committee of National Treasury to approve any request of that nature. Apart from that, all of the water boards are within the borrowing limits. Stipends of board members are determined by the minister, and all water boards are complying with those stipends as they've been determined. There is a policy on stipends to ensure that there is consistency across all the water boards and equal treatment of the board members. There was a question then around demographics of water boards. In terms of the actual boards, there is good representation in terms of race and gender. As in many cases, there's a challenge around people with disabilities. We can provide the committee with the actual figures if the committee would like to see those actual figures. There was a question about the capacity of water boards. Capacity is always a difficult question to actually answer without going into detail. Most of the water boards have fairly good capacity. Ikhangala is the one water board where obviously there is no capacity residing at all. And most water boards are in fact assisting the municipalities with their operations in one way or another. Once again, Ikhangala is the one water board that's not performing any assistance of that nature. There was a question around external debt of water boards. The National Treasury, as I said, applies the borrowing limits in line with PFMA requirements, and all the water boards are in compliance with National Treasury's requirements. Are the strategic plans aligned? The strategic plans of the water boards are largely aligned with the imperatives of government. I think the chairperson is aware of the fact that at the strategic planning process of the department earlier this year, we had a full-day session with the water boards to ensure that there was, in fact, alignment between the water boards and the strategic plan of the department and the government imperative. And I think that's an extremely useful process and one that will certainly be continued in terms of ensuring that kind of alignment. There is, however, some further work to be done as we actually roll out programs in the department in terms of understanding what the specific contribution from each water board is, for example, in terms of bucket eradication or whatever it may be. And I think my fellow DDG should be able to comment on that process if there's further information required. The quarterly reports where they are submitted are in line with the strategic plans, but obviously, as I've mentioned, there is a challenge in terms of getting the quarterly reports submitted regularly by all water boards. The question was asked whether regional officers are compiling reports. At the moment, the regional officers are not compiling reports on water boards. There's been something of an arm's length relationship between regional officers and the water boards. We are in the process of turning that around. There is a protocol developed in the department now to look at the role of the regional officers and to make sure that they are much more involved on a day-to-day basis, engaging with the operational issues, engaging with the challenges, and then being able to feed that information back into head office. So that the relationship of the regional officers with the water boards will be considerably enhanced this year and going forward. Municipal contracts with water boards, I'm sure that the water boards themselves are reporting on what contracts they have in place. Some of the challenges are that some of the water boards have raised concerns that the contracts that municipalities are willing to sign with them are in fact often quite short-term contracts, and it makes it quite difficult for the water boards to plan long-term when the contracts that they're facing are in fact quite short-term. And that is something that we in fact need to work on. Municipalities obviously have the authority to choose whom they want to do business with, but one of the discussions that we've been having in the department is the need for the department and in that relation the regional officers to be a lot more proactive in terms of, in a sense, marketing the water boards and supporting the water boards in their discussions and negotiations with municipalities. And then in some areas, the Section 78 processes are taking an inordinately long time to be finalised. And because those aren't being finalised, the contracts with water boards are not being finalised, and there are sort of interim processes that are in place. And that is a challenge in terms of supporting municipalities and driving them to finalise their Section 78. There's obviously an issue around the collection of debt, and once again, this is an issue that the water boards are extremely concerned about. There are a number of issues around why water boards are facing debt from municipalities, one of which is that municipalities do not necessarily ring-fence the money that they get from water charges. It vanishes into a municipal budget generally and not necessarily into a ring-fenced budget. And that is an area where there is considerable work that is needed to be done because not only in relation to water board debts, but simply in relation to municipalities being able to run their water business effectively. They actually need to be able to ring fence the water charges and keep it for the water business and not for more general municipal functions. A lot of water boards operate in rural areas where there are challenges in terms of income and revenue for the municipalities. But there are also issues around in those areas what is happening to the equitable share and how that is dealt with. In terms of the treasury regulations, all water boards have to exhaust all avenues in order to try and recover the debt before debt can be written off. Most water boards do in fact have in place a policy on the writing off of unrecoverable debt. WAF is currently putting together a process. We have initiated a process with DPLG and with National Treasury to try and look at the issue of debt to water boards and see how we can deal with it across the country, because it is of significant concern. In terms of the Amatola transfer agreement, the staff has been transferred to Amatola. The issue that is under contestation is the transfer of assets, and there is at the moment no resolution on the matter. The Buffalo City are arguing that the assets should go to themselves as a Water Services Authority and not to the Water Board, and they're using the Municipal Structures Act to argue that point. WAF is of the opinion that in fact the assets should probably reside with the Water Board. There is at the moment, we have recently received a letter from Buffalo City on the matter, and our recommendation would be that the DG needs to meet with the Mayor and discuss this, but this is an ongoing issue that needs to be resolved. In terms of the Pella Northern Waters financial state, there have been several meetings held to try and resolve the matter on the Bapala Borwa debt, including National Treasury and DPLG, and efforts are continuing to reach an amicable solution, but no magic wand has been waved in that one yet. Mahali's Water and their accounting approach. A meeting was held with Mahali's in March last year to discuss the matter, and they appointed new external auditors who recommended significant changes in the format, content, and presentation of their financial statements so they should be fully compliant with GAAP and IFRS. These changes resulted in two key qualifications. They also have a R4 million subsidy for the operation of rural water schemes, which will end in the next financial year. And then the issue of whether one should maintain a water board for one municipality. The water boards that I think this covers is Ikhangala, Albany and Botswana. The institutional reform process, on which I think the committee has asked more details on, is actually looking at the issues of whether it makes sense to have water boards where there is only one municipality. And there are a number of issues that need to be looked at in that regard. One is there scope to broaden the functions of the water board into a more regional operator? If not, then what happens between the municipality and the water board? And that is being looked at in the institutional reform process, and it will come up with various options to be followed very much on a case-by-case basis, because we need to look at the particular situation of any one water board and the municipalities affected. Going back to the issue of debt and a debt that is longer than 90 days, it is the responsibility of water boards to follow up with water services authorities where there is debt, and most of them actually do. The Minister has intervened in several cases. Lapela and Bapala Borwa and Shakuzi and Kanyakude, Mgeni and Msunduzi, Botswana and the Central District Municipality, Bushbuck Ridge and Mukhlabela, Bushbuck Ridge and Mbombela. The issue of subsidies came up. There's been an attempt to get water boards to reduce on operational expenses and improve systems, but I think we do need to recognize that in some areas water boards are operating in situations where, as I mentioned earlier, revenue is a significant challenge. And subsidies of some form are going to be required, whether it's through the equitable share or whether it's in some other way. Ultimately, all the subsidies will in fact be combined into the equitable share. There is a clear decline over the years in the subsidies that are paid to water board by GWAF, and it will ultimately be phased out in approximately 3 years. the intention then being that the issue of financial viability will be addressed through an equitable share rather than through a subsidy from DWAF. In terms of the institutional reform program, the institutional reform program is underway. I would request that we in fact be allowed to provide the committee with a report on the institutional reform program and where we stand on it. One of the steps in the institutional reform program is to look at what's called a boundary study, trying to look at what boundaries make sense in terms of where regional service providers could be useful and important in the service provision scheme of things. But we can provide the committee with a full report on where we stand on institutional reform. Chairperson, I hope that deals with the questions that were raised by the committee. If there are any outstanding questions, we will happily reply to them as they are raised.
Sorry, are you a member of Parliament? Oh, you wanted to add? Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't. Maybe you can just introduce yourself also.
Okay, I'm Norman here, working in the Department of Water Affairs. I'm the project manager for the infrastructure reform that the DDG is talking about. So I just wanted to give a brief in terms of what we have done up to so far and where the process is. And as she indicated, then the report will be provided the brief report in writing will be provided to the chairperson and the portfolio committee members.
Yeah, well, as indicated, the major project in the project is boundary study. We looked at the financial viability of various institutions viability, and also the technical and water resource availability, as well as the economic hub. And based on that, we came up with 17 boundary scenarios in which we're going to look at the regional water service providers. So the idea is to where the scope needs to be expanded based on the study, who will expand the area of water board, and where they are sitting, as indicated, within one municipality. This, depending on the capacity of the municipality, we might transform that water board into or transfer the assets and then grant by the municipality. And depending on the capacity, as I indicated, or else together with the municipality come up with another alternative. We also looked at the governance review of these governance structures that we can come up with. Of course, there are three that we have currently in the country. We have a municipal entity, and in terms of the legally, from legal point of view, what is that is required for us to do that, and therefore, where we have a water board sitting within a municipality, probably it should be a municipal entity managed by the water service provider. And we also look at the co-ownership. We don't have a good example, but there are the governance structures that we've put together in terms of looking at how to strengthen that. And we also look at the municipal entity where we've got a strategic partner as a water board to partner with them and give the regional perspective in terms of how they should expand their services. We will also look at the one where we've got the public entity, the water board, but then as a major shareholder, but then municipalities partner with that water board in terms of how they approach the water service delivery, since they are, as the municipalities, is in charge with the responsibility for service provision. But in the case of Amatole, we also have got another one sub-project we call reform investigations. Amatole, Buffalo City, Kresani, and Amatole, and Amatole, we formed a steering committee that consists of the politicians and in fact we've got two forums. We've got the project team that's technocrats and also the steering committee where we have got politicians. Up to so far we have identified 9 options which we need to present to the steering committee on the 13th of April if the meeting goes ahead.
to just decide on the three options. We have water utility where it will cover the whole Eastern Cape. We have various options. In fact, let me just put it that way. And from that point, then we'll do further investigations in terms of based on what they choose between the two. But I must say that in conclusion, we came to a point where we concluded in terms of institutional reform, and what we have now, we have done up this so we presented this to the technical unit on the 16th of February, and we also present the task team that consists of DPLG, SAU, SALGA, National Treasury, and also TCE in terms of just an opted participants who have there some sort of regional, they are also assisting us. And that committee, they approved the strategy. What is remaining now for us is to sit down with the DG and the minister to bring them in terms of the outcome of the technical min-mec and also the outcome of the task team. That in principle, that strategy, they've been approved that you can go ahead and start do the thorough investigations. So we have to see the minister and then we'll present the min-mec and probably it will go to cabinet after that. So the step that we are is we are in now is to see the DG and the minister. Unfortunately, the first week, 2 weeks, we couldn't get on the DG. But I think this is how far we've gone at this point.
Let's end there because I think yes, of course, we did ask the questions around the issues that you are raising, but it's quite a bit of detail that you are giving to us, and it's far better to have a separate discussion, I would imagine, with the committee, because it's a substantive issue that you are raising here. Yesterday, a number of the boards indicated they have their own fears about this, and so I think let's not go further into this. Let's agree that that information must come to the committee. The committee must, at the end of this 2 days, decide what do we do in relation to this aspect around institutional reform, because our interest in it is service delivery. And whatever happens must advance service delivery. It must not take away services, and so from that that angle we would move on this aspect. Let me ask the members, were there anything that were left out? And for these next 2 minutes, let's see if we can conclude this work and then go back to the agenda. Commissioner.
Parliament elects laws not to be evaded, but to be adhered to very strictly. Now, I find it very difficult when one reads the first page. Some deputies do not comply with quarterly reporting on shareholders' contracts in keeping with PMFA. Further down, quality of reporting is problematic. I don't know what is the problem. Now, some deputies don't comply with Section 41 of the PMFA. Now, I think this is very serious. It is of great concern. I don't think boards are above the law. I mean, come in chairperson. It is very difficult to follow why different entities do not comply with legislation. There must be some explanation, but there's no explanation to what. And then also, which board do not report? You simply say board. I think that's another way. You got 15 boards. Then, finally, the Section 78 process, I don't know what's the complication. Signing of agreements is another problematic area. And most deputies have a policy on writing off unrecoverable debt. Now, I think one should be able to get a report on who are these debtors. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I fully agree with the previous speaker. My apologies to Ms. Schreiner for coming late in her presentation. But with regard to the last speaker from BRAC, please, when you give your report to the committee, will you make sure that there are time frames? We don't want to hear that you've still got to speak to the minister and the DG and you can't find the DG. We want to know when you're going to speak to the DG and when these strategies are going to be put into place so that we can actually measure what's going on. Because far too often we get I said it yesterday, reports from the department, and it just says, well, we're doing this, or we're in the process, we're going to do this, and we don't actually know when it is that you are going to. So please, measurable time frames. Thank you.
I'm the DG. I'm the manager.
Chapter 7.
My apologies, madam.
Thank you, Chief. And actually, I just want to make a comment after Barbara's comment. I think it's pleasing to see that the minister has been with those culprits on the 90 days and longer. But what I really would like to stress, I think the CE yesterday was appealing, couldn't be guaranteed that not by writing up, by collecting debt, they will be clean next year this time. My concern, however, is the ongoing build-up of debt there is the 90 days. They're over 1,000 days already. So that's just a concern that I'm sure she would like to take with her.
Thank you, Chair. If my memory serves me correct, last year we requested the department to give us the strategic plan of the water board. They indicated to us that they're there, they can forward to us, but we never received anyone. And this year they think the business plan, they are also there, and they can forward to us if we request it. What I wanted to know, what makes them not to provide us with those strategic plans of the water board to us?
Now the question is, why do we not get a response to the recommendations that the portfolio committee made in May last year and the year before? Because all of the issues that we are raising are contained in that. When we asked WAF to come back this morning, we asked them to include that in their response, and that's also not there. Any last hands this morning, Wood? Is the Honourable Aaron coming down? There's an alliance between the ANC and the DA, I'm worried. Ms. Reiner?
Chairperson, thank you. In relation to the issues raised around the non-compliance, the Minister has in fact written at the end of last year to the chairpersons of the non-compliant boards raising in fairly serious terms their lack of compliance. I'm afraid to say it doesn't seem to have a huge effect, and it has had a huge effect, and we're going to have to follow up now after sort of a quarter has gone by to follow up on that and see where compliance has improved or not and what action we're now. What is the next step in terms of trying to actually get the board to comply with the legislation? I think I did in fact mention when I spoke the boards that were not complying with the quarterly reporting. It was, in fact, the answer was that only four water boards are complying with the quarterly reporting. It's Randers, Ngeni, Susie, and Bloom. All the other water boards are not complying with the quarterly reporting. The issue of the Section 78, the department has a program of working with municipalities, supporting municipalities to complete the Section 78. But yes, it is a process that is taking too long, and it is a process that is adding complexity to the work of the water board. The question of who are the debtors, I believe that yesterday in the presentation, in fact, who the debtors are was contained in that. But if there is more information that is required, we can provide the information to more detail. In terms of the time frame for institutional reform, the point is taken. We will provide a written report to the committee, and we will include time frames in that, and we will do our best to find the DG in short order. Yes, the issue of the linked debt is a serious concern, and yes, there are real challenges in terms of getting in debt that is now not only 90 days, but well beyond 90 days overdue, and what the implications of that accumulated debt are in terms of the municipality being able to pay. But as I say, there was a process in place with Treasury and DPLD to try and actually address the whole issue of municipal debt to water boards. In terms of the strategic plans of water boards, This is the mission of that we will send to the strategic plans within the next 2 weeks, and we will also send to the committee the analysis of the business plans that we have done.
I will ask the members to take into consideration when we conclude our deliberations and our report to take into consideration the question that you have raised, and that is around compliance. We will seek the remedy in the Municipal Finance Management Act. When there is no compliance, what needs to be done, and we will be guided accordingly by what the Municipal Finance Management Act is, because that's what the Act is. If there's no compliance, then we will seek remedy in the Act, and that should form part of our recommendations in the meeting. Equally, so if there's not been any compliance with the Public Finance Management Act, it's our duty to seek a remedy in the Public Finance Management Act. Equally so, there's an ongoing issue around the transfer of assets and so on. Again, we will seek remedy in the Public Finance Management Act, because it does give us guidance. You can't carry on for 9 years. I think it's 9 years. You can't be negotiating for 9 years on a substantive matter like that. So I think, can I ask the members that we take that route on the issue, and seek guidance from what the Act tells us. We can't keep on asking more and more questions around that. Agreed? Thank you. Ms. Taylor, good morning, welcome. Talk to us.
Madam Chair, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Water Affairs and Forestry, officials of Water Affairs, Department of Water Affairs, and all other protocol officers. It is my pleasure to present to you the Butchelo story for the year July 2005 to June 2006. The year can be aptly described as Butchelo's year of turmoil. As the year dawned, the hubbub of forestry worried was a dark cloud hanging over the management. The CEO, Mr. Timela, was on permanent study leave. The Ministry Secretary, the chairperson of the board, was also acting CEO of the board. And two senior managers were on suspension. On the 1st of September, Mr. Naragi, managed the technical services, replaced Mr. Secretary as the acting CEO. On the 24th of October, the board terminated the services of Mr. Letimela, the CEO, due to financial irregularities. On the 28th of November, Mr. Naragi, the acting CEO, was suspended due to unilateral reappointment of the Swasa manager, the package not agreed to by the board. Mr. Fandersberg, the senior project manager, was appointed the acting CEO. On the 31st of December 2005, voluntary severance packages were offered to three managers, and they accepted them and they left the organization. On the 20th of January, Mr. Sepakeli, the chairperson of the board, resigned on grounds of poor health, and Mr. Ntefang assumed duties as acting chairperson of the board. On the 1st of March, Mr. Ntefang was appointed as the chairperson of the board, and on the 24th of April, Mr. Jan van der Merwe, a consultant, was appointed as acting financial manager. On the 27th May 2006, Butchelo Water received some sad news, the passing of Mr. Letimela, the former CEO. And as of 30th June, Butchelo Water operated with a skeleton management team. Some key developments after the 1st of July that I would like to mention. Mr. Vandenberg, the acting CEO, accepted voluntary severance package and left Botchalo Water on the 31st of October 2006. And Mr. Ranjit Fernandez, that's myself, I was appointed as the CEO with effect from 1st December 2006. The tenure of the board of Botchalo Water ended on 31st December 2006, and the new members of the board is yet to be appointed. Botchalo Water covers about 42% of the Northwest province. As you can see in the map, it's a western region of part of Northwest province. In that area, about 1 million people are served, of which 75% are in the rural areas. Botchalo Water as an organization is a one-stop services delivery water services provider, from source to tap and brew to river. Some of Botchalo Water's strategic involvement during the year, in the Crocodile Marifo Waste Catchment Management Agency, Botchalo Water served as Deputy Chair of the Molopo Water Management Forum, Northwest Water Services Forum, served as a member of the forum which supports the Provincial Growth and Development Strategy to develop strategies for water services delivery. And in the Provincial Growth and Development Strategy, Botchalo Water served as a member of the Infrastructure and Construction Working Group. The operations of Botchalo Water. The year started with Botchalo Water operating 4 water services storage areas and 1 international scheme. And the Swanee Metro Municipality operated the Krishnapur and Chamber Switch treatment works. In Moses Kotane, it operated the Madikwe area. And in Bopiriyama District Municipality, it operated in Kakisano Local Municipality and Molopo Local Municipality. In the Moduli Molema District Municipality, that is the former Central District Municipality, operated in Mafikeng Local Municipality, Ramoshere Moilwa Local Municipality, Kitsubotla and Ratlava. The Swasa Water Scheme is the international scheme which provides raw water to Gaborone in Botswana and to the Dirty Port Irrigation Farmers. Botswana Water handles a few infrastructure projects, worked on a pipeline for Dinakana and a reservoir at a cost of $8.2 million. Then worked on drought relief work in Pela Malik areas at a cost of $8.1 million, and major refurbishments of number 2 filters in the Modimola water treatment plant at a cost of $0.9 million. It also operated bulk water supplies in 8 water treatment areas in Mabasa Mafikeng, Motswedi, Kopfontein, Molatedi, Zedikwert, Pela and Madikwe. The two at Pela and Madikwe handed over to the municipality, was the Kotani Municipality, which effect from 1st of July 2006. There were 2 areas where operations were conducted for bulk water supply, that is supply of water without any formal treatment. The 2 areas were interesting in the Botla Local Municipality and Jinukana in the Ramoshere Moilwan Municipality. Botchalo Water was also involved in regional water supplies in the Hanyeta District of Bopiriyama District Municipality, in Great Oskapuram Pamphlet areas of Molopo Local Municipality, in the Leoche, Kamatsuri Moila Municipality, and Malikwe in the Moses Kotane Municipality. The Malikwe part was handed over to Moses Kotane Municipality from 1st July 2006. The Swasa International Scheme, which is, as I said, the water supply to Botswana, Botswana Water Operated Scheme, and during the period under review, but we supplied 5.7 million cubic meters to Dirty Port Irrigation Farmers and about 4.6 million to Gaborone in Botswana and almost a quarter million to the Malikwe Game Reserve and other minor consumers. There was no water releases to Dirty Port farmers during November 2005 and May 2006 due to restrictions that were imposed. It took operations on sanitation services. Botchalo Water operated and maintained the following sewage purification works, which is Kripat, Temba and Mukwasi. The Kripat and Temba were handed over to Swanee Metro with effect from 1st of October 2005, and the Mukwasi treatment plant was handed over to Moses Kotane Local Municipality with effect from 1st July 2006. Other sanitation services operated were in 5 sewage purification plants on behalf of other government bodies, 3 hospitals, Susong, Telakplan and Bobalong, Mafikeng Airport and Motswedi. Botchalo Water also embarked upon training its employees, and 81 employees, 63 males and 18 females, received training for developing their skills, and almost $500,000 was spent on this exercise. Uchilabad also participated on a monthly program through radio mutualing, that is, interact with communities in creating awareness among the communities regarding water issues. Coupled with the rural schemes, there were virtual water operators and maintained 2,340 boreholes. Details are given there, windmills, engines and hand pumps. And some of the windmills supply both domestic and livestock. Virtual water was also committed in ensuring that quality water is supplied to its consumers. It supplied a total volume from the treatment plants almost 14 million cubic meters. And during the year, 1,596 tests were carried on to check on the quality of water. And we had 39 failures in that. And of the failures, 30 of them related to insufficient chlorine in the system and 9 related to microbial parameter failures. But immediate action was taken to disinfect the water as required. Then also, Bustillo carried out sort of a once-off exercise in testing a number of boreholes in the rural areas. So 120 boreholes were tested, and we found about 66 hazardous failures. 31 had bacterial failure, and 23 related to nitrates, and 12 related to fluoride. And we believe that we should do regular monitoring of the water quality to make sure that the groundwater quality is maintained. Asset management. Bustillo Water, unfortunately, do not own any water services infrastructure assets. However, with the assets that we are operating and maintaining, we established a preventive maintenance system through the aid of a computer software called Pragma System, which helps to effectively plan, monitor, control, and report on the assets operated by us. A key feature during the year, which I could say, is that the operation of Bustillo Water shrunk. And I say this, the project division had to surrender the implementation of new water supply projects to the Water Services Authority. On 1st of October, Swanee Metro took over the operations and maintenance of Slipath and Timber Sewage Works. And arrangements were finalized for Moses Kotane Local Municipality to take over the operations in Madife area with effect from 1st of July 2006. This shrinking had an effect on the water tariff for the remaining areas, as the fewer cost centers had to share the head office cost. And as of 30th June, some of the challenges that were facing Bustillo Water was money owed to Bustillo Water from mainly the municipality, almost 128 million in the books. And at the same time, Bustillo Water owed Water Affairs and Forestry about 43.4 million. And another challenge that is facing us would be the outcome of the Section 78 process for Bopirima District Municipality and the Nkaga Muliri Mulayama District Municipality, that is the former central GM. Both of which are ongoing and will have a great impact on the future role of Bustillo in the water industry. In supplying potable water to our consumers, our net income, we issued water to the total value of 50.9 million. You can see the breakdown there. But we only received 36.4 million. Shortfall of 14.5 million, which is about 28.5%. And on our other operations, the rural maintenance and sewage recovery, a total of 54 million was billed, but we only received 48.5 million. Again, a 10% shortfall. Another thing of concern to us was that Bustillo Water received a qualified audit report for the year for the following reasons. We had a loss of 36.3 million incurred during the year, and the liabilities exceeded assets by 29.8 million. The ability to continue as a growing concern will be entirely dependent on the financial support of the Department of Water and Forestry. The international audit standards, some of them were not followed. Auditors could not confirm the valuation of property, plant and equipment. And also a property in Bustillo Water's books with a value of almost 180,000 was registered under the Muskane local municipality. However, some of the key achievements during the year was Department of Water and Forestry accept positive acceptance of the 5-year plan, business plan that was submitted. We also had a service provider agreement with one of the water service authorities, with Bopirima District Municipality, was signed on the 31st of October. The agreement between Central BM and Bocello Water was under discussion as of the end of the year. However, it was subsequently signed. We also signed a memorandum of understanding with Mithwal Water Company for the possible utilization of their potable water from the steel-contained Mithwal plant to serve the CDM areas and possibly even Botswana. This was signed on the 10th of February 2006. Madam Chair, I would like to add, despite our turmoil that we had, despite the shrinking, despite the qualified audit report, the skills and management team took great pride in turning things around for Bocello. And in recognition of that, Bocello Water received the PMR Diamond Arrow Award in December 2006 in respect of its performance during the previous financial year. Finally, it is my prayer and wish that Bocello Water will have the opportunity to turn things around and march towards achieving its dream of being the recognized global model for the efficient and effective supply of quality water and sanitation services, whilst recognizing the right of all to access basic water services. I thank you.
Thank you very much to Bocello. We're going to ask Namakwa Water Board to speak. And we'll ask the members to hold on to the question.
Chairperson, honourable members, I'm actually sitting here as somebody appointed by the minister to, in the interim, manage the affairs of Namakwa Water whilst the board, there is no board currently in place, and there is no, there has never been a CEO in Namakwa Water. My name is Louis Nadas, and I am currently the acting regional head of DWAF in the Northern Cape. So, Madam Chair, you'll have to excuse me. I'm just going to go briefly through the annual report of Namakwa Water and then highlighting some of the challenges picked up and then just showing the current status and the way we're moving with Namakwa Water. So, as I'm sitting here then, the department has requested me that this morning I will have on a cap of Namakwa Water. Whilst in no formal presentation, Chairperson, I'll highlight some of the things in the Water Board's 05-06 annual report. Namakwa Water is, contact details, is supplying water. Namakwa Water is supplying water to just the currently Namakwa, this municipal area in Namakwa land. Water coming out of the Orange River and taken into Namakwa land, there are no other resources. As you see, just the yellow area there, and the green area is the neighboring area of Karierberg Municipality, which is currently under severe constraints with regard to water supply. And part of the plan of Namakwa Water would be, and will come out in the processes, to maybe look at extension to Karierberg. The infrastructure is for rather small supply area, and the small area on which it's totally dependent is quite substantial, around about 120 kilometers of pipeline. And supplying water mostly, as I said, to a number of communities stretched out through the area of Namakoi. The board had to make some commitments in the year under discussion of refurbishing some of the pipeline systems, and they had to obtain a loan of about 8 million rands from Development Bank. They are still currently credit worthy, and they can still obtain loans. But as I'll highlight later, this is becoming a major problem. The client in the area has become more and more difficult for payment of water. Because of the mines going down, most of the copper mines in the area, such as OCC, which is part of Mutarex, have closed down a number of mines. And the people of Namakoland remain in Namakoland. They don't go somewhere else. So the rate of unemployment has increased dramatically, and the ability to pay not being really addressed by the current formula of equitable share. It's making it a problem and will be a future problem for the Dutch Water Board. The board has managed over the past 2 years to not increase tariff. It had been a decision of the board at that stage not to do it, to try to keep it affordable as possible. Again, you'll see in the financial figures that although it has been a good decision for affordability at that stage, it might not have been a good decision for the business. You'll see the current price is still at 299 per kiloliter, and in a very water scarce area, that is very affordable. I can half a minute, please. I'm sorry for the disturbance. Water quality has not been a major problem. The plant is currently underutilized, so the possibilities of extension maybe to neighboring municipal areas is a possibility if funding for the infrastructure could be obtained, because the board cannot by itself fund infrastructure. No water quality problems, nothing had happened during the time. The supply has been very good, and a very happy clientele. The personnel composition, very small, as you can see, a total of just about 30 people. You'll also see the uniqueness of the area in that white and Venetian colors are the only staff representativity party. The current constitution and the recommendations to the minister on the board will address some of that as well. Next picture is that uniqueness. They also sell some raw water along the line for numbers of those communal farmers in the Concordia and Steinkopf area, and then the water sales, as you've seen there, to all the different billing points. Payment has been very good up to now in the area, so there are no problems. Namakoi, there is a lag of around about 30 days normally, never becomes 60 days, and the rest of the mines, mostly the beers, are very good paying clients currently. So cash flow wise, there is nothing outstanding on the books. We can just quickly look at what I want to highlight there, which is the next one, if you can see. Is that they had a loss as per income statement. They had a loss over the past 2 years, and the last year in 2005-06 it was a loss for the year of 7.4 million. Mostly because of the loan that they had to obtain from DBSA and being shown in the accounting way as it is on the list there. So, although they had managed up to now, the chairperson members, to be a sound business, all the signs are there that they are sliding backwards at this moment in time. We just quickly look at some of the notes to the annual financial statements. In the time they had to take over infrastructure from the former OKIP company mining to be able to ensure water supply to the Beers Plenty area, another 100 kilometers further, it's been shown as part of its assets, but the department had to write off the portion of the loan of OCC owed via the board to the department to enable them to take over the infrastructure. If you look at the next page, and specifically the notes on the loans, long-term loans, you'll see that this is one of the boards that still had to buy all the infrastructure from Dwarf at that stage. They were not handed over the infrastructure. Although Dwarf, over the years, of government through National Treasury, has written off numbers of large amounts because of the inability of the people in the area to contribute to the capital repayment, there's still an amount owed to Dwarf. As you see there, and the board must pay an annual, during 5-6, an annual installment of 865,000 rands to the department. And the board too is now already struggling, and you've already seen the fact that they're operating at a major loss now and have to eat into their reserves. During the past year, an amount has been written off because of the fact that Gulf and Treasury saw that they cannot contribute, they cannot expect the normal consumer, you can expect the mines to contribute to that, but not the normal consumer now that the mines are closed down. Then there's also the loan of DBSA to sustain the water supply, especially to the towns of Springbok and the higher demand for water supply in the area due to high levels of service and some industrial activity. It has increased, and they had to refurbish sections of the pipeline to ensure that the water supply continues, and that is what the loan for DBSA was about, and the loan has to be repaid by this board who is sliding backwards. And then just under 7.5 on that last page, you'll see that 7.5 from the statement says, no transfer was made to the maintenance fund due to an operating loss of 5.9 million in totality for that current year. And that is a picture of where Namakwa currently stands. Now, there is no board and there is no CEO. The minister appointed me towards the end of November to see to the process of getting a new board selected, and also to oversee the day-to-day running of that board to ensure that no disruption takes place and ensure that all the financial systems and everything from labor issues are being addressed. So that we've gone through the selection process, and recommendations have been sent to the minister's office, and the appointment of a new board is imminent. And once a new board takes over, myself and the department such will have to do a lot of interaction and have to do mentorship initially to ensure that they are up and running. And I think the new business plan will have to really be discussed with them to ensure that all of the new challenges are taken on board and that the department is aware of that and that the portfolio committee is aware of that. The operational status, luckily no disruption has taken place. There have been threats in the newspapers in the area of the staff striking and they will cut off water supply to the Makwaland, but the interactions has happened and luckily that everybody still continuing. Unfortunately, and I have to make this remark, Chairperson, is that by trying to keep the water from the Makwaland as affordable as possible, there has been some neglect of the team who is supposed to assist the board in supplying the water, and there are some gaps that need to be addressed in the labor portion of it. the fact being that this board has been taken, the infrastructure and the works has been taken over from Dwarf initially by the mines. And the mines had a lot of input into that, and they had provided the personnel, and then the personnel was taken over when the mines closed down by the board, taken over the mines service conditions and a lot of those things currently need to be addressed. That is also why no CEO has ever been appointed, and because the mines insisted on that. And now we've run into that major problems, and part of the recommendations to the minister have been that they will now, in terms of the legal of the Water Services Act, they will appoint, although it will be an additional financial burden, they will appoint the CEO in the future. The Section 78 process, we've touched some of my, or some of the Dwarf people have touched on that, not my colleagues that aren't sitting here, Chairperson, have touched on that. yes, Namakwa Dwarf is fully assisting the process. We're funding and we're driving really the task team, although it is a Namakwa municipality which should be in charge. We're assisting them through all of this. And we foresee that through the funding and the processes, now that a service provider has been appointed, that the processes of initial report and then second phase report and then community and public participation will take a minimum of 8 months in that area. And we expect to have a final report ready by February 2008, which will then guide the minister as to the future bulk water supply in that area. I again apologize for the rather unprofessional presentation, but unfortunately I've been forced into this. Thank you very much.
Tempted to say that Afrikaans is a sort of same of a trade for the years when you serve. I think we should ask questions to the two boards before we go to the other two, and then we can have a quick break. They are there, but let's have questions to the two boards, and then we'll go to them. To the other two boards, to the one board that's the chief secretary. Any questions to those tables? Rashiva, Maina, Simple.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is, when will the position of CEO and senior manager in acting position be filled, is my first question. And my second question is, I just want to find out if the board has a plan for qualifying employees to retirement benefits. And my other question is on the issue of land. I just want a clarity. Where they say land and buildings were, land and buildings were and not registered in the name of Ushiele Water, and then registered in the name of Ushiele Water and the government of South Africa. That's what a clarity. Thank you.
Chairperson, I should start with the correction. That water bond is Botelo, which means life. Botelo, not Ushiele. yes, Botelo. Chairperson, I would like to know, to ask Botelo whether they wouldn't have the committee with listing the rural areas which they have already done tested to the boreholes. Because I know that the Northwest is 85% is rural, and most of the rural areas don't use boreholes. So one would want to know whether they could not list that, so that we can always make a follow-up on that. But I also wanted to know whether what steps they have put in place to solve the issue of the annual report claims that they have got the qualified report and but at the same time, there was this thing that they could turn the whole thing around. What is it that they are doing at the moment to make sure that in future we won't be met with their qualified report again?
Thank you, Chair. First, to Botsello. About the debt, it would seem that they are owed 95 million rand, of which there's an amount of 41 million rand owed by SWAT, which can be offset by the 27 million rand accounts payable to SWAT. I just want to know what is being done to turn that situation around. Botsello maintains that it could be a viable entity. If it receives or if it got in all its money that it's owed. And Mr. Quite clearly states in 2006 that it's not a viable entity, as it relied mainly on subsidies from the department. So what has been done to recover that money? And my sympathy to the new CEO, he only took over in December 2006. But what have you planned to actually make this a viable entity, and does he believe that it's actually possible without the subsidies from the department, which they heard earlier are going to be phased out over the next 3 years? And then to Namakwa, I appreciate that you're only in an administrative position, but it clearly looks like you're not a viable entity, simply the fact that the department had to put an administrator. So what is the point of actually appointing a new board to take over an entity that, to me, looks like it's about to disappear?
Is the amount simple? The amount that you said is owed to the store?
$95 million. This includes an amount owed by DWAF of $41 million, which is offset by $27 million accounts payable to DWAF.
My question to Botsello is also in relation to, my colleague is correct. I think the minister responded to a question asked by an assembly in 2006 to say that board is a viable option or entity. The one learns, however, from the annual report that the board thinks that things can be dramatically changed. So I want to mention to that particular one. Because I wanted to know whether the dramatically change means if all the money that's owed to them are paid, are they referring to that? If that money comes in, there will be a dramatic change in the situation of the board, or are there other issues that they were looking at that will make necessary change? So that's what I wanted to ask. And then to Namakwa, I just wanted to know that, as my colleague is saying, it would appear as if it's not a viable entity. But I wanted to know in that particular area, that if the board isn't there, who would be in a position to provide services for the current to provide, although it seems not to be a viable entity. Thanks.
To the hotel or water. I wanted to find out exactly about this taking off of the debt of 36.5 million during the period of 2005-2006 financial year. Come again? Okay. If they can explain to us there was any agreement with the department with regards to that, because they are owing the department 43.4 million. Meanwhile, they wrote off the debt that they are having. If they can explain us what this presentation is all about.
Yes, Chair, but unfortunately, I forgot something I wanted to ask the Botsello board. I wanted to know that, and I wanted to link that to the money owed to them. I wanted to link that to the audit, the qualified report, audit report.
now, because a board is viable, becomes a viable entity, and their financial situation changes, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that they no longer would have qualified audit reports, because for you to receive a qualified audit report, there are other things that they must comply with, okay? The other issues of compliance exist, and more often than not, some of the boards that have been here and probably will still come clearly seems like viable entities. So, you know, but some of them have also received qualified reports, not just because of cash flow situations. So, I wanted to know what the board is looking at in changing that situation around. The question of qualified reports.
Can I just ask a concluding the question to both boards? Yesterday, we also had a board that was linked to a mine. And again, they pointed out all the things that they did yesterday. Now, with Namakwa, also, you know, the mine, and the board, and so on, and all of these other problems that go with it. Were there any economic impact studies done on the board, its economic situation around it, the impact thereof, some mines come to an end, what does that mean for the board and where a board is closely linked with the mine? Has any of those things done? Because I think we find it quite peculiar yesterday and today with a similar situation. And so I think it's not just whether there's a qualified audit or not, or whether they aren't boards. In most instances, we tend to concentrate on if there's no board, then there's a problem. In the crisis, the board is not viable anymore, and that's where life must end. And, well, obviously, I think that can't be the situation. I think I'm asking this question because yesterday we said it, and I'm saying it today again. In the annual report that the board brings before us, we don't see the entire picture that you put in your annual report. So we cannot measure as a committee all of these other factors. And so it's very difficult. All we must rely on is this is what the finances look like, and it's got a board or it doesn't have a board. It doesn't assist us to say that the economic impact of the things, the area around it, the changing nature, in fact, of everything, are being taken into consideration. And the same to share, no, life. The same to them. Again, I mean, if the issue simply because you've got a qualified audit and, you know, all of the very sad stories that you have told us, what about the influences brought on the board that has got the board into such a situation? What are the issues that influence the board, both internally and externally, that got you to where you are? And then, if you have identified that, what then is the path that you're taking yourself on? I think the point is noted about it. It's not your board. There's a number of boards where if you drop subsidy and without a drop subsidy, you're really not sure what's going to happen beyond that. So I think it will help us to tell us, you know, there's a life much bigger than the board. There's an area more than one area that they're operating in. And all of these things obviously must have an influence. Things are changing in South Africa. There are economic changes in South Africa. Well, of course, the boards can't tell us that they are not being affected by it. And to that extent, you know, how are the boards, in this instance, the two boards, the other boards might as well just answer it also, how are the boards taking that into consideration? I think it's going to help us to understand that one, because I don't think we're chasing for, well, of course, we must comply with the Act that says there must be a board in place and so on, but I think it's not just about that there must be a board, it must be about other things also. So I think if you can help us to take us through some of those issues. again. In both the boards last year when you were before us, in your view, what has changed between last year when you appeared before us and now what you are giving to us? Let's, I think those are the questions, Father Makala, if you want to say something.
I'm not sure that one of the reasons why Marcelo received a qualified reporting report is the fact that a property that belongs to them is registered under Mafikeng local municipality. I might have missed an explanation for that, but are there any corrective measures in terms of regularizing this in particular asset?
Thank you, sir. Just want some clarification on the quality of water supply. We understand that the total volume of water supply from treatment plants 13.9, but here they also talk about failures 39. I don't know exactly what causes this failure. Simply failures. Perhaps you can elaborate on that. Thank you.
Chairperson, yes, some of the things are obviously very relevant, as the Honourable Member said. The Mapa Water has always been a viable entity up to now, but the environment is catching up with them. The fact that they now have to refurbish 30 years plus old infrastructure which they bought from Dwap, they are still, what is it, credit worthy. And it is, they had been willing as of last year to still give them a loan. But the picture is that they will not be able to sustain that if they have to get refurbishment, repayment out of consumer, and the consumer has changed in the area majorly because of some mine closures. So they've never received any operational subsidy from Dwap in the past. So they have been a viable institution. The Section 78 process hopefully will show up what will be the best model there. There are more maybe if local government, and it being at the dimensional, I may be preempting the outcome of the Section 78 process, but some of the things that could happen is that regional bulk and things like that could become, a refurbishment could maybe be funded via municipal infrastructure funding, which would move away from having to pay that themselves out of a loan. The other thing is, as I said earlier, while trying to keep the water as affordable as possible for the people of Namaqualand, and they've managed that over years very well, it has caught up with them. The only source of income is to sell water, and you could still balance the business, but it could, affordability could become a problem for the people there. And then the picture of people, of currently the users being keeping up with payment will change into some of the other scenarios which we have heard about. So the balance between affordability and payment for refurbishment as well as payment for upgrading. Because during summer peak time, the town of Springbok is experiencing problems already. And that would come out, Chairperson, I think, as you said, the full economic picture that needs to be looked at, and the change, and what will happen in future, are there any prospects or not? What will have to be supplied? Obviously, there are no other options, and whilst waiting and touching on the new wire, new board, somebody must take the responsibility until the final outcome of the Section 78 process, and the minister could have made a decision as to which way to go. I will also consider, I'm a Namaqua Water Board person now, consider any kind of subsidy model or not, which would not be the best thing to do. But in the meantime, It must be new board. The new board must ensure that no disruptions take place and that the business is being run, albeit just for another 10 months, because the situation with Dwarf as an administrator has to take full responsibility is not something that can continue until February next year. The next question from the honourable members also be on the viable entity, and I think I've covered all of that. A mine closure thing is always very difficult. You know, sometimes the mine stays within the next 2 or 3 years, and then it gets extended another 5 years because of the fluctuation in price and maybe rand, euro, rand, dollar, rand, yen. So it's difficult. The board has taken this in the month, has taken this into account, and they've come forward with trying to have written off some of the infrastructure liabilities towards the department. It's also obviously something else that could be looked at again, of trying to keep the board viable, motivated for writing off the rest of what is being owed to Dwarf. But again, the picture in the Northern Cape, and it's not just here, in totality, Chairperson, is that the current formula is the equitable share, where the poor must be assisted in ensuring that payment takes place for basic services and for water, does not speak to small numbers of people. It does not allow for those people to be able to afford, or the municipality through the share, to afford to supply to the poor people. And I said again, the number of indigents, registered indigents, are rising by the day. Thank you. I think I've covered.
I'll come to our guests in the gallery, the learners and their teachers. Good morning. How are you? It's a good Shirley. Today we talk, you know that it's Water Week. And are all of you helping to save water in the country? How are you? I can't hear. Good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The very first question that was posed to us, caught us with a bit unaware. I take it that what was asked was whether the position of CE, the chief executive, is filled or is being filled. If that is the question, I would like to say that the chief executive position was filled with effect from 1st of December 2006. The appointment of the board itself, we took action to make submit our recommendations to the Honorable Minister, and we are still awaiting a formal reply, which we hope will be received soon. Then I would like to speak about the rural areas, the testing of boreholes in the rural areas. I am not aware of all the villages that were tested, but I know Morafeng and Hamiesa were two of the areas, and the others also in the same location, the same areas where the boreholes were tested. Morafeng and Hamiesa. As regards, there was another about 39 failures in the water quality. This relates to the low level of chlorine, residual chlorine in the water supply. That is not in the treatment plant itself, but in the reticulation at the reservoirs where we carry out testing. But what is need to be done is to increase the chlorine levels, and that has, we have taken action to handle that. I would also like to speak about the debt recovery strategy that we have. Now, as you know, the municipalities and other consumers owe a lot of money, almost 95 hundred million. And these debts actually are, some of them are almost 10 years old, I must say. So we have started negotiations with the municipalities with the hope of recovering at least part of the debt. That is, at least the last 3 years' debt. My problem at the moment is, in the absence of the board, it is very difficult to take any strategic decisions regarding this. But nevertheless, we have commenced discussions with Bukirima District Municipality, Tawashiri Moila Municipality, Department of Public Works, and Northwest Development Corporation. And we are sort of hopeful that we will receive about 40% of the debt from Bukirima District Municipality. We have not finalized it, but there is a good chance of recovering that money. Then as regards the other issues regarding the Calcutta Rally report, I would like to ask my financial manager, Jan Kandemal, to address those. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the financial side, when I joined in April of last year, the first exercise we did was to do a tariff calculation, because we had to do the tariff model. And we then discovered that the raw water purchases in the books of Port Shelley were completely understated, in that the raw water purchases from Dwaf were far less in volume than the actual sales of water. When we investigated that further, we reported that to, I first reported it to the board, and the board then asked me to report it to Dwaf, and the instruction was that Port Shelley must come clean, because we were cooking the books. So we came clean, and we invited Dwaf, who then attended the meeting at Port Shelley, where we opened the books to them. But the bottom line of that was that there was also a report from an independent audit firm about the debt in our books, so-called owed to Port Shelley from by Dwaf to Port Shelley. Those were actually costs that were capitalized in the books of Port Shelley over a period of about 5 years, which amounted to another 43 million to the other side. So on the one side, I had to provide for raw water purchases, which were understated, so I had to raise a huge creditor. And on the other side, I had to write off a debtor by the name of Dwaf, whom now, you know, according to the audit report, and that audit report was withheld from the auditors when they did their 2004-2005 audit, which now led to huge prior year adjustments in the books and which rendered us insolvent. Dwaf then gave us an undertaking that they will not demand payment of this money to them over the short and medium term. But now, Dwaf also wants us, obviously, to try and recover some of the 95 million rand owed to us by municipalities. And we are following a strategy, as my CEO has elaborated on. And we trust that we should be able to recover, in my view, around about 40 million, so that we can repay that to Dwaf. In which case, because if we recover the 40 million, it will go straight to profits in the books, because it's already been provided for as a bad debt. So if we can recover that money, we will then show that as a profit again, and then we can pay back the drop, and then we can break even in our assets and liabilities in our balance sheet. So I'm sure that over the next 3 to 4 years, we should be able to repay our debts to the drop, and to also become not solvent, but to just break even. Maybe our CEO could just expand on the terms of or the agreement, heads of agreement that we've reached with NITPAL, which might also add to our financial viability in future, in that if we could bring water from the Midval area into Port Shelley area and also sell water to Botswana, we can become a very profitable organization and cross-subsidize water supplied to the Northwest Province by selling water to Botswana. With regard to the fixed property registered in the name of Mafikeng local municipality, this appears to have been an error that incurred when in 94 the assets were transferred from the Northwest Water Authority to Port Shelley Water the attorneys that did the transfer then registered it in the name of Mafeking local municipality. We're trying to find the deeds on the property deeds, but we haven't been successful on that, and we've now requested, or we're in the process of doing a forensic audit on all property transactions that have taken place in Botshelo over the last 5 years. There was this question on other issues for compliance. We recognize that the valuation of property, which is the one qualification we had, we will adhere to that and we will fix that. But the major one is really our going concern concept. You know, if we're not a going concern, if we can't, if we're technically insolvent the way we are at the moment, then we can't carry on doing business. But we know we can turn it around. Thank you, ma'am.
Maybe I'll look to follow up on him now. Obviously arising out of the many things that they are accepting from us. Can I give all of you payments? Masala, and the Sabayani, Manana.
Can I share with you the you know, but Silo was a original, was a Parasitan organization under the Zona Homeland, located here, and was after 1994 transformed into a water board. Now, in my own opinion, I do not think that the process of transforming the Silo water has been completed. In view of the response to my question, it does indicate that there are lots of gray areas. Perhaps an appeal to the dwarf itself, you know, to go into this matter and to actually find out whether they can assist whatever to get itself out of this situation. I hear mention of attorneys and so on. But I don't, in my own opinion, believe that the Botshelo water itself would be able to educate themselves out of this kind of situation. I don't know. That is my take on the whole issue. You know, we'll sit here next time and they will still be trying to give an explanation.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I want to redirect my first question to the fact that the action was taken to disinfect the water. I want to know the results of that. And another thing is that is it not possible for aiding water boards more or less in the line taken by my colleague here. The department takes responsibility because we as members of parliament were elected by the people and they expect us to see to it that they get water. So is it not possible for the department to carry the responsibility until such a time that the water board, any water board become viable?
That's a nice question with regards to the writing of death of my husband. It was an answer to my Chairperson, I also want to follow up on Dr. Musala and make a plea. You see, water boards that have always been existing in the
South African site was all transferred to Dessalov. But what about that were transferred from, like, from Botswana? It has not been easy. So I also want to just follow up on that, that dwarf should find it in itself too. And to find some of the liabilities that belongs to the Botswana, because you might find that Botswana has got other things, but they were all wrongly registered somewhere. And we will help also. As a person from that province, I will also make sure that wherever they are stuck with the government, wherever one can always intervene, we'll help and see to it. But I'm asking myself if Botswana board was to be done away with, what will happen then to everything in the Northwest? Thanks.
Can I ask that later today when Dwarf responds, Dwarf has got to help us to answer the following. Last year when the committee had the boards before them, this is what we said on Botswana in our report. Whilst the new board was constituted, the board faced major challenges in the form of 110 million rand had to be recovered from the municipality. Unauthorized water connections posed major problems for both the municipalities and the water board. There were uncertainties created by Section 78 processes, same thing. So, on the financial statement, we said Botswana is not merely financially viable and is dependent on block subsidies for over half of its operating and administration costs. Block subsidies are in arrears to a value of 41 million. So we know the difference from what we see here. Total amount receivable, total 95 million. If the situation is not resolved, cannot be seen as a going concern. That's what we said last year. And then, when we looked at the number of other things, there were no internal audit committee in place during the financial year. All the relevant board committees should be put in place. The auditor notes all these big amounts that were said that is ocean to us. And there were many other things that we said. I'm not going to go through all of them. I think it will help because I hear what the members are saying, but these were the things that we had said last year on Botswana. They are before us today. And we obviously don't see any improvement, if not the fact that things have worsened, but let's give them an opportunity. I'll get an opportunity this time. I'm not going to help the intimidation with the face now. Chairperson,
the 41 million referred to in what you've just referred to there as outstanding subsidies payable by Dwarf to Botswana is the same amount that we now had to write off as a bad debt. And that would be the answer to your question, I think. Now, well, that's the only one that I think, you know, that I believe was an outstanding question.
Madam Chair, just to add on that results of the water quality test that were carried out. The water quality in the treatment plants, there was no problem. It was okay. The only problem was the level of residual chlorine in the system at the reservoir, where we take samples every now and then to see the chlorine levels. That was the problem that we had, but it was not a major issue because we did increase the chlorine levels of those places as and when we noticed it. So we have taken that situation under control.
I know TCPA is waiting patiently, and they are happy that we can have a break also now. A comfort break. Can we be back in 10 minutes, please? Thank you. Honorable Manana.
can you lead the delegation of the members back into the house to make the spirits to disappear now?
Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members of the committee, colleagues from the water and services sector. Chairperson, I need not remind the committee that our presentation today takes place in the backdrop of at least some few presentations that we've made before this committee. Last year and also recently when you visited our project. Chairperson, in the absence of any indication, save one, on issues that the committee might seriously be interested in looking at the CCTA, we are making a presentation particularly on our backwater project exit strategy. We have not yet translated this strategy into a future strategy for projects that TCTA may in the future become involved in or engaged in. However, we do have currently an exit strategy that was specifically designed for purposes of the project at hand, that is the Bathwater project. We hope out of this and these discussions we also will come out enriched in terms of future preparations for other projects that we have. Chairperson, I also had discussions with the Chief Executive Officer on matters that perhaps might have arisen in the course of discussions yesterday. And one of those issues, I requested the Chief Executive to prepare one or two slides on the issue relating to the raw water tariffs and the contribution that perhaps we could make in that regard. And finally, the issue relating to a contribution TCTA could potentially make equally on the development of some guidelines and a framework for institutional development and institutional oversight in the water sector, as well as oversight on our terms. Making the presentation chair would be the Chief Executive Officer, and we are accompanied also by our Executive Business Support, Lynn Musa Singh, as well as our Environmental Manager, Mr. Nigel Rousseau. And we'll take the questions to the rest of the crew. This conference that will proceed to the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity to present to you. I just need to note that this presentation will not deal with the creation of the South African National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency. It is one of the Minister's priority projects and one of the Department's priority projects, and that would be subject to a separate presentation and processes with this House. Secondly, we structured the presentation in such a way that we're not repeating, although we are providing information that was included in the presentation also made to this House on the 18th of October. So you will see, if you go through the handout, that in the middle we have a little slide saying questions. And I'm intending to stop at that level, but we will be able to deal with questions if there are questions relating and emanating from the other slides. Just to talk about TCTA itself, is unlike the water boards, we fit into the water resources sector. We are an entity classified or created under the National Water Act and not the Water Services Act.
And we are also classified in terms of the Public Finance Management Act as a Schedule 3 entity, where water boards are classified as a Schedule 3 entity. Our work that we are doing is the rollout of bulk raw water infrastructure, and we do it on a manner that it's mainly the infrastructure for economic purposes, so we can finance it in the private sector, and we can repay through the water charge, and it leaves government or the department's budget to be spent on social infrastructure. This is just a map where you can see where we fit into the water sector, and you would see is that we are in the top quarter, top half of the diagram, where we fit in together with the Department of Water Affairs and Forests in the water resources side. And together we deliver the water to the water services side, which could be directly to municipalities or to water boards. I'm going to just quickly run through what to say is that we're currently implementing three projects or involved in three projects. The Lisset Wireless Water Project is in the debt management and financing stage. Burke Water and the Vaal Pipeline is both during in the construction or implementation phase and funding phase. If we look at our alignment with government, I think what we need to say very clearly, together with the Department of Water Resources and Forestry, we are in the development of infrastructure, and it's infrastructure that is mainly aimed at ensuring and economic growth. If we look at our alignment with ASVISA, it also talks about springboard for economic development, and it also talks about where we fit into is scarce skills deployment and development. To note, we'll also touch it on just a short report on the human resources. TCPA skills-based force into the three critical skills areas, which is your engineering, project management, and finance and treasury skills. So obviously that is one of the risks that we need to manage quite carefully. The last aspect that I would like to report on alignment with government is we follow a developmental approach, but within that we involve private sector. We look at institutional agreements to achieve appropriate risk allocation, transparency and cooperative governance. Tariffs are set in a transparent, predictable, and sustainable manner. We set clear socio-economic objectives. Specifically, we look at the fact that projects during the implementation phase create temporary jobs for a number of years, but it's not always long-term jobs that's created. And then our main focus is, and we will also come back to that in our presentation on our exit strategy, that whatever we do, we would like to link on to existing initiatives, whether it's infrastructure that we need to create or mitigation programs that we need to work with provincial and local government also in those areas. I'm not going to spend too much time on the sustainability principles. Then if we start to go to our annual report, and there's a few aspects that I need to note here. In the course, you made presentations to this house in October 2006. The call was to report on how do we support the Department of Water Affairs in the role of creating growth and development. Now, seeing that our whole mandate really fits into that area, we've actually based it quite a lot on how on our annual report and how we actually factor that in. So from that process, we need to say that it was then also our annual report was considered in Parliament on 16th of November 2006. Going back to the aspects that the committee asked us specifically to report on, I would just like to make the following comments. Number one is CCPA did receive an unqualified audit report for the 2006 year, as it did receive for all the other 20 years of existence. Secondly, we are CFMA compliant. We are also NFMA compliant specifically to start to look at what stage we need to include and do our calculations to feed into the tariffing review cycle. So if you look at, for instance, in this year, the tariff that needs to be applied from July 2008. TCJ already starts the review process and consultation processes in May 2007 to be able to make a recommendation to the Department of Water Affairs by August 2007 so that the water boards and the municipal local government structures have enough time in place to be able to make their right decisions. A report on the board, just to say our new board was appointed on the 1st of July 2006. On gender representation, 50% gender representativity, so we have 50% males and 50% females. And on equity representation, it's 95%. The board committees that he has been in existence for quite a number of years, for the last 12 years at least, is your audit and risk, your HR committee, and your funding committee, which we discuss and approve funding strategies. The technical committees have been put in place since we started with the project implementation, and that's a cooperative governance structure where our major users have the participation in the decision making. They've been in place since 2002, and we've created a board transformation committee which is in operation since 2006. On the other HR aspects, the staff, if you still look at the staff representativity, 60% is female gender and 60% is equity representation. And on the supply chain side, as you will see that we have reporting, also progress reporting, but to say is 96% of our spend is on BEE spending. It's according with the framework. If I just go to a quick update, because it's nearly a year since our previous annual report, I will just take you through our current areas. If the Burke Water project is on time and within budget, Vaal pipeline, we're looking at delay in water delivery due to unforeseen circumstances, about 7 months, but it's within budget. Our procurement spend for the financial years up to January is been 97% on BBBE. Procurement through contractors, so that is some of our socioeconomic objectives that we're setting at 380 million. Jobs created through the project, if you do look at the per annum basis, is 2,900 per month. And then the representativity take more or less the same about 60%. I will hand over to Nigel Rousseau, who is our environmental manager, to take you through the Burke Water Exit Strategy.
The exit strategy that I'm going to be briefly speaking about is specific to the Burke Water project, and through the lessons learned from this strategy, we're hoping to roll this out to within TCJ. And to inform our other projects. The strategy is forward-looking, and it's got different components being implemented at different stages. It doesn't happen all at one go. And it covers a whole range of initiatives, projects, and interventions, and it's essentially to mitigate, looking at mitigating the negative impact of the completion of the construction phase. So there's a whole range of initiatives which I have listed up, which I'll just speak a bit about more detail individually. When during the initial years of the project implementation, TCJ and the department was faced with a very hostile and unappreciative community. The site efforts had extended governance and monitoring to the local community through various structures, like the Environment Monitoring Committee, and we have an Employment and Training Committee. What we found is that local communities are not really empowered in terms of information, knowledge, and access to government, and access to services and access to resources. We found a highly divided community with extreme income levels, community with a lack of community structures, a lack of vibrancy in the community, a lack of associations. And what we started doing in collaboration with the local municipality is we started a process which we're calling an appreciative inquiry process, which is looking at really supporting community development supporting the IDP process, supporting the ward structures, and it's really a public process of capacity building for communities to take charge of their own destiny, to take charge of their own future, and to take charge of their own development. So it's moving away from a mindset of an us and them, from a mindset of confrontation and demanding when government is going to deliver, when projects are going to deliver more benefits, while our projects getting involved in service delivery, to move more into a mindset of collaboration and thinking of the community with government as kind of a we mindset. So there's some basic assumptions that we're using in terms of this process. We want the community to start discovering what's working within their communities, looking at and appreciating what strengths they do have and building on those strengths. And so it's looking at and recognize and identify what is positive within their community, what are the strengths that they have that they can use to collaborate with different spheres of government, with projects, with developers, and recognizing that the best of what already exists and start collaborating with developers, with different spheres of government, forming associations, forums, and so on, and looking at how they can promote community development and so on. So that's just basically about that process. And moving on, one of the underneath that appreciative inquiry process, we're really going to be starting implementing a whole range of projects. One of those is looking at health and well-being. One of the aspects which has been limiting, we've noticed that there's been quite a significant limiting factor in local community, local individuals accessing jobs on construction, and one of those has been due to the poor health status. So we found high levels, significant levels of high blood pressure among the local community. And this has been one significant factor in accessing jobs on the project. And so that was obviously a matter of concern for us, and we're speculating that due to a whole range of stress in terms of poverty, unemployment, and health-related factors in terms of poor nutrition and so on. So we could have chosen to ignore that, and what we instead want to do is we want to promote greater health awareness, greater social awareness of the impact of health and disease, because that really limits the opportunities for jobs and so on. So there's two initiatives and two projects which we're looking at implementing. One is focused on health and one well-being, and the other is focused on an HIV/AIDS awareness campaign. What we've also found is that there's no NGOs, there's no CBOs actively involved in health issues, actively involved in HIV/AIDS. Our concern, obviously, is that we have 438 non-local skilled workers and professionals during the construction phase over a three-year period. 82% of these are migrant workers that are moving all from project to project. And in terms of infrastructural projects, some of the lessons that we've learned from the city and other projects is that you could have social health impacts which manifest itself after the construction phase of a project. But we're particularly concerned about that, and so we want to implement this health and well-being initiative. The other project which we're looking at implementing is we've been subjected to our own initiative. This is what we call the Frontier First Policy, where we've looked at maximizing employment, procurement, and training in all of our contracts, as well as with initiatives that ECDA has implemented to maximize the use of local resources in terms of people accessing jobs, training, and procurement. And so we're moving into a process now of having strategic discussions with local developers, regional developers, different spheres of government. So we want to encourage them to build on this initiative created by the Burgwater Project so that there's a more sustainable effort in maximizing local employment, maximizing local procurement. And so we want that to continue. Moving on, in terms of training, which is another area where we want to sustain our effort, we've already undertaken significant training in terms of construction skills. What we want to focus on going forward over the next 12 months and further down the line is to support community leadership. What we found is that because we're working in an area that is non-unionized, all the local workers do not belong to the union, we found that labor relations have been a bit strained because of that, because they're more comfortable getting advice from their ward councillors, ward committee members, and we found that, you know, when certain cases land up at the CCMO, the Department of Labour, that there's been incorrect and inaccurate advice being passed on to local workers. And so with the Department of Labour, we've initiated a series of awareness and information sessions for community leaders. We also want to provide community leadership training. In addition, we're looking at business training for local SMMEs, and that's really to support sustainable enterprise development. So we have engaged local SMMEs, local enterprises, but we want to sustain our involvement in making sure and supporting in sustainable development and sustainable growth. Moving on, in terms of learnerships, we have, as part of the project, we have built 80 construction houses, which will be eventually transferred to the Stellenbosch municipality. And in anticipation of the jobs that's going to be required and the skills required for those for that housing project, we provided training for unemployed local people prior to the houses being built. And out of that training effort, there were 86 people that successfully completed the skills training. All of the graduates received employment afterwards and are still currently employed. And we're looking at an initiative of furthering their training and taking them. They've done the theoretical skills training which we've provided. They've had more than 2 years of working experience. And we really want to take them on a further learning process and entering them into specialized trades. Moving on to the one of the facilities that we've established on the project is what we call an employment information desk. And we've used this facility to ensure that we're able to maximize local employment and local procurement. And we've more than a year prior to the construction starting, we did a comprehensive skills analysis that existed in the local area, and that enabled us to develop an electronic database, a relational database, where we're able to understand what are the skills level in our local area. And throughout this process, we've developed trained staff. We've got a highly valuable database on the levels of skills that exist in the valley. Not only of unemployed people, but of people that have got permanent and contract employment. And we believe that the resources that we've created here, the infrastructure in terms of the software, the hardware, and the people that we've trained, those can be used by the municipality and other developers to promote local development. It's currently already being used by local developers, by the municipality, by the provincial government to support them in their project implementation efforts. Okay. I'll just move quickly to the next following slide. One of the major significant social impacts of all construction projects is that there's a huge number of unsustainable jobs being created for a very short period of time. And one of our objectives is to facilitate further employment of particularly the local workers. And we want to facilitate their entry into other job opportunities in the Western Cape and elsewhere in the country. So there's a number of initiatives that we're starting with our existing contractors, which we have on the Burnwood project, as well as with industry leaders like the South African Federation of Civil Engineering contractors and other other bodies like that. Furthermore, as part of the exit strategy, we will also be transferring our construction housing. Now, this is a process which has already started more than 18 months ago of discussions and negotiations with the municipality to prepare them to take over this construction village of 80 houses. We have established agreements up front in 2003 with the local community about what is the process of transfer for the housing, what are the benefits that can be expected. So we have these agreements up front, and now we're in the process of the next 12 months of implementing these agreements, and we've had public meetings, stakeholder engagement meetings with the Moss community as well as with the communities in the wider Franschhoek Valley to inform them of this process that's going to be happening over the next 12 months. Looking forward beyond the construction phase, we've got a two-year process which has really been on the run, which we're calling a sustainable utilization plan. Department of Water Affairs and Forestry refers to it as a resource management plan for the other dams. And essentially what we're doing is we're trying to consolidate the state land surrounding the dam and looking at finding what is the optimal land use for the safe land surrounding the dam and integrating that into the opportunities created by the dam as an asset. So we're looking at maximizing economic opportunities to promote local economic development. Lastly, one of the things that we quite interested in doing and quite passionate about is drawing lessons learned from the Birdwater project and ensuring that not only TCC and the department but the industry learns from some of the hard lessons that we've had to go through. And there's a couple of areas where we felt we can make significant contribution, a knowledge contribution. One is in terms of training. The other is in terms of governance, extending governance to local communities. And the other is in terms of maximizing the economic impact of projects. So they are quite critical lessons which we are looking at implementing a systematic process of doing case study analysis, of reviewing that learning and sharing that learning in terms of best practice to improve the industry. Thank you.
That's not included in the pack. I've got one slide that's not included in the pack. And it is talking about water tariff composition. Now, there was a lot of debate relating to what is the raw water price, the impact of raw water pricing on water boards, and the impact of the pricing then on the end user. Now, this is just a typical type of text tariff that actually gives you the three layers of pricing that's going through. And I believe that when we start to look at comparisons between different water boards, between different local government areas, that we need to start to have a look at is how do you determine it, because it is a set tariff. The cross-subsidization to your 6 liters free basic water is really happening on your municipal level or your local government level. And so from that point of view, is you need to see is what the raw water price is, and this is an example of what the impact of the Lesotho Islands Water Project price, water pricing is, well, that's what's factored into the blue TCGA block there. And you have the water affairs existing infrastructure, which is the orange block, a water board pricing component, and then the little light blue block talks about how the cross-subsidization takes place. I believe this might be a topic for further discussion because I think water pricing and water pricing throughout the chain is quite important that everybody understands it, because you need to balance the affordability on the one hand and the fact that you need to have an organization that can sustain it, it's a sustainable organization on the other hand. And I don't think we're going to throw that discussion in a one-minute presentation. But I've put this up because I believe in yesterday's information that was supplied. Not everybody had a picture, for instance, what is happening in the metro situation where we have blocked status. Yes, I will. It's on the presentation that serves on your survey. And then, Madam Chair, then you will take questions.
Before we do that, I actually wanted to put a question to your annual report also. I mean, you'll take the questions on the entirety, and then Loomis comes here after. So I don't know if you wanted to speak to that part also, but before you do that, can I just ask the members, can I just be excused for a few minutes? And ask the next just to come and sit here for a few minutes. I see if it's still there for me. I just need to go and talk to them. Is that in order?
Madam Chair, we can continue with the rest of the presentation. As I mentioned earlier, we've also made this presentation on the 18th of October. So my proposal would be that I go through some of the highlight slides on this. Just to say it then links on to some of the feedback I have given under my previous slide number on page 4, but you will find this presentation then on page 12 of your handout. I think just to talk about further highlights of 2006 was then also the signing of the institutional agreement on the Vaal Pipeline project, the fact that all the environmental approvals were achieved, and that we are on track, we're on track with the mandate and budget for the different projects. Talking about operational performance, which is on slide 13, then talks about the fact that we comply with the international finance reporting standards, which converged in 2005. We had a cost allocation of 454 million owing to the government of Lesotho. If I just maybe can by the government of Lesotho, if I can just maybe expand on that, we have received since this debt was recorded 205 million, and the recovery mechanisms of that debt is incorporated in the treaty between the two countries, between South Africa and Lesotho. It was money that was allocated for the use of the what we called at that stage mixed project. So the project had both a water transfer leg and a hydropower leg. So it was the allocation of those costs, and this is how we are recovering it. Then I would like to talk about just the reporting that I've done and highlights relating to our BE and triple BE procurement. For that specific year, it was 731 million. The diversity profile, the organization has grown to a size of 90 people, and we looked at training and development of own staff of 5% of payroll, which amounted to at least 55 employees of where that was exposed to training. On the income statement side, you will see that we made an operating surplus, but that we actually made a deficit for the year after we've taken interest into account. We can deal with questions relating to that, but to say it's the way the water tariff has been designed, it's done on a basis that you look at a constant tariff, a smooth constant tariff in real terms. In other words, it will only grow with inflation over a number of years, over a 20-year period. And that decision was taken after consultation with the Department and National Treasury in 1995-1996, that would be a more equitable way of looking at recovery of costs to be able to service your debt. So for a number of years, for the first number of years after completion of construction, you will have a deficit due to interest that is not fully covered in that specific year. Where we are with the assets, you will see total asset base of 18.6 billion, and we are mainly funded by borrowing. So we don't have any equity, and we do not have any reserves, because we're created as a special purpose vehicle for the implementation of these projects. I am not going to go into great detail about the different funding sources. I think what I would like to deal with from the financial side then is to rather report to you on our going concern component, because I think it's important that we deal with it. This component is not in your handout. I've done it, I've included it to explain the tariffing methodology. But I think what we need to talk about when we start to look at TPTA as a long-term viability is we need to be able to say if it's large infrastructure projects that we're implementing, we're not necessarily operating it. So we're like a capital expenditure arm of government. So the way we would be able to service our debt on the one hand and to make tariffs affordable it is the balance of what you charge on a tariff in the first number of years of the project itself. So the way we're doing it is we look at your tariff methodology, we look at income agreements, and we look at explicit and implied government guarantees on the City Island Water project and on the funding structure, a project finance structure on Burg Water and the Vaal pipeline. I'm just going to take you to the picture. If you look at the fact, if you exercise the option to set the tariff in such a way that there's no capitalization of interest, in other words, you will have no deficit at any point in time in a year, is your tariff will be much higher and you will be able to repay such a project of this size and nature over a 15-year period. If you look at option to say, if you look at the constant tariff in real terms, you would be looking at repaying the project over a longer period of time, but you will have a smoothed tariff over the period. Now this is just to show you that would be a smooth tariff, and we're looking at repayment of the project over 20 years after completion of construction. If you look at the impact of future phases of raw water development, that does also have an impact if you take a 30-year view and a 20-year view to set your tariff. And this picture just shows you where we are is, it all depends how the demand curve changes, whether you will have a project in place by 2028, that you have enough water in the current system, or if you need to put if the demand curve is lower, maybe you have to bring a project in place in 2035. I think what I would like to further say is on the rest of the reporting, I would like you to take you to the slide which is on page 23 of your handout, and it starts to talk about our socioeconomic objectives in the way we roll out projects. Here you will have a report on both projects where we looked at the total of number of jobs created in that specific year, where we also set targets for local jobs. As for HDI, so we look at the 90% HDI target that's been set. You will see on the Burg Water project, at the end of March 2006, there was in employment. On the contractors for the dam contract, 811 people working, and on working for water, 636 people working. If you look at for the Vaal pipeline project, at that stage, they only started the project, so we only have 611 people working on that project itself. If you start to look at training, there is training that takes place through contractors where you count it per person day. So overall in the project, this looks at creating training of about 20,000 person days. About 16,000 person days if you add the number of local people, or indicating the number of local people is 5,819. If you look at total on person days, it was 11,000. And then if you took at local people, it is 10,000. If you start to look at the procurement spend, we see that part of our socioeconomic objective is to look at procurement spend through projects itself. And this is where we we put guidelines in place, contractual guidelines on how the contractor needs to spend their money on BEE, as well as local enterprises and small and medium-sized enterprises. And with that, I think I've dealt in highlights with the annual report.
Thank you, Chair. And that was the presentation we wanted to make. Maybe as an aside to this, we wish to indicate that TCTA is now almost 20 years of age, and we are in the process and fact, we got the go-ahead from the minister to arrange for, you call it a celebration once at least before the agency comes into play. When our lifetime might probably be of a different nature. And then also request that in the program, maybe we've been referring to as GCTA, it's Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority, not Association.
Thank you very much for that GCTA. You know, we celebrate 23rd, not 23rd. That's coming up of age, so maybe you can wait another year. I can understand that fear that you're having. Thank you very much to the chairperson, the CEO, Nigel, everyone. Thank you very much, CCA Bloom. Can we ask you to come and take us to your CCM? Not Bloom, sorry, it's Randwater. Sorry, Rand. I'll just come closer also. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and members, the Water Board and other institutions, the Dwarf representatives, good day. We are just going to try as Randwater to present the report as we had planned. But I must say that I was here the whole day yesterday, and I had an opportunity to listen to all the comments that the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee made in relation to how this report should be useful in terms of the members, and also how the report format were not really assisting, and they were not all kind of coming up for most of the board members, and also the portfolio committee members. I did pass on to the managers yesterday to try and highlight some of the areas that the chairperson wanted kind of highlighted, like the strategic objectives of the company, the actual activities undertaken, the supply chain management, and the relationship with other boards and municipalities and dwarfs. We'll try and do this, though it was very difficult at that stage to try and change the format of the report. I can quickly say that in terms of generally, if I can get into an evaluation of our relationship, in particular with DWARF, that I am very pleased to say it is beginning to improve. And I can quickly give you the examples as to why I'm saying so. Beginning of this
year, end of January, we were invited as all water boards, including Sound, to the Dwarf Strategic Planning Conference. And we were happy, and we are actually beginning to understand what Dwarf is going to be doing for the next 5 years, because the minister clearly spelled out the strategic priority areas, both internal and external. And since January, I can actually also say that we are beginning to see some of these priority areas being followed. One of the priority areas that was mentioned was the whole area of capacity building of the internal dwarf and the dwarf-related structures. As you have also heard from other boards, that this is an area where there is a lot of activity and problems. Dwarf, through SAUM as well, has agreed to fund the capacity building area of water board, largely around the area of governance and financial management. And the first for this year is going to happen just before the end of this month. And also I can also say that in terms of the area which everyone has complained about, the whole area of board selection and governance within boards, DWARF as well has sent to us an evaluating team to try and look at the policies, the processes, and everything that goes with that. Hopefully all these are going to be able to strengthen our relationship. And I can also mention the area which has been very problematic to most boards. It's the turnaround time for decisions that we are requesting DWARF to assist us in. And Rand Water has agreed to send DWARF in advance all the dates and areas where, when we begin to fight, it would be understood why we are fighting, because some of these things get lost in the system. And that is beginning to assist us in terms of getting the core decisions made or endorsed by DWARF. The other area that has actually assisted us is that the minister has had various meetings with individual boards and through the SAUM delegation as well. Communication is improving in that sense that the DG, the minister, and Ms. Schreiner's section have agreed that most of the decisions that we would require from DWARF would be expedited without delay. One of the things that came up clearly in that, and which we appreciate very much from DWARF, is the establishment of the COO's office. Because if the matter is an administrative matter, it now can go directly to him, and he is expected to assist us getting those kinds of administrative issues that are not needing a huge kind of process of consultation to go through. That has really assisted us. We are now able to just say that, well, we and DWARF have an agreement around this issue, but we need the processing of it rather than trying to locate the minister or the DG or everyone else. And they do it internally. He doesn't have the decision making power, but he makes sure that the related authorities are able to respond to our needs. We are very grateful for that. There are a number of other things that DWARF is planning to do, and we are hoping that it would actually be communicated correctly, and the opinion of the water board and their structure called SAUM would be solicited. In terms of getting back to the Rand Water matter, we have a team here, which is Zoe Belisa, who is sitting, who's sitting down there, who's our relation, stakeholder relations manager, and we have Keith Nyser, who's our chief operating officer, and we have Mr. Themba Ngabeni, who's the CEO of Rainwater. As we have said, we're just going to try and give you the report as we had prepared, but we're going to try very hard to highlight those areas that you, we know you need to understand.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and board members from other water board colleagues. It's the first time I come to this house, so if I make mistakes, please forgive me. Our report relates really to the period 1 July 2005 to 30 June 2006. So it's a while back, and I actually joined the company in June, so I had only 1 month of this year I'm reporting on. Rainwater is a water board established in terms of the Water Services Act, and we're a Schedule 3B institution in terms of the PFMA. And where our allocated area is as follows. We are nearly bulk water suppliers to the areas that are shown in the map. Excuse me. And that area covers roughly 11 million people, so we have quite a responsibility in terms of making sure that the quality of water that we supply is up to scratch and that we don't cause waterborne diseases in our area. And fortunately, in the history of Rainwater over the past 104 years, we've done that successfully. So we won't be focusing on that in this report, but we'll be focusing on other things that we've done. Our service area was increased in December 2004 by a gazetted through the Gazette from the Minister to include the area of Tembisile, Kumwini, or Western Highveld area. However, we have not really been fully in control of the area. We do have a pipeline that we installed with the help of DWARF during the past financial year, and the total cost of the pipeline was 112 million rand. And we financed 42 million rands of that, while DWARF financed 70 million rands of it. The pipeline is capable of supplying 20 megaliters of water per day, which was meant to be a drought relief measure, really, because the area we're talking about has two water sources, one in Kumwini and one in the JS Moroka area. The systems, this area actually is part of the Kangala water board that is no longer functional. And we still have a problem in terms of making sure that the people in the area are receiving an adequate supply of water and good quality water. We have been approached by the Department of Water Affairs this year to supply only the southern side of the area using the Bronco Spray Dam. However, the political climate is such that the thing has not been finalized, so we are still waiting, although we've got teams that are ready to move in and make sure that the supply infrastructure is revived up to a normal working condition. So we have a problem really with the area that I'm talking about, which is that additional area added to our historical supply area. If I can just move on and look at our sales for the past year, and which is a continuing trend. We supply, most of our water is supplied to municipalities,
There are 16 municipalities that we supply, including the Greater Johannesburg, which is the largest customer we have. We also have mining customers who make up nearly 7% of the supply. And then we have industries and other direct customers who make up a fairly small portion of the supplies that we provide on an annual basis. The year that we are talking about is the year where a new minister was appointed, and the DG was appointed also in the same year, early in the year. We also got our Rand Water Services, which is a 100% owned subsidiary. We got it operating for the first time fully fledged as an independent entity in that year, 2005-2006. There was also a significant management restructuring, which resulted in the reduction of direct reports to the CEO or to the CE from 9 down to 5, which was aimed at streamlining the operation of the entity and make sure that people who have to work together do work together without having to appeal to the CE continuously. That change has been bedded down and is operating almost seamlessly now. We also had a major incident with the failure of a taper which on a pipe that feeds into the Meerdale Reservoir, and that incident caused quite a lot of water to flow down the township of Meerdale, which I guess because of our reporting period you would have had of the incident last year. Then we also had a significant occurrence in our finances, in the sense that we redeemed 860 million rands of debt, which was due for redemption in the past year. Moving on to our finances in general, I would like to state that we had an unqualified audit report and that we are fully compliant with the CFMA to our knowledge. And in terms of results, there was an increase in the amount of water that we supply on a daily basis. On average, we supply around 3,467 megaliters per day. And that was 0.9% up on the previous year. So our growth rate is really decreasing in terms of growth of demand for potable water. The revenue that we made was 3.6 billion rands, and that was 6.1% up on the previous year. And the income also went up by 19.7% to 593 million rands. So you can see that there was improvement in internal efficiencies to drive a higher increase in net income than the increase in revenue. There was a drop in operating cash generated. It was down 0.9%, and this was largely due to a change or a decrease in payables at the end of the financial year. In terms of assets, our asset base was reduced slightly by 5.6%, which is really not a significant change. If we look at sales over a longer period of time, from 2001-2002 up to 2005-2006, we can see that there's been a decrease in the growth rate from heady 6.25% in 2002-2003 down to a 0.88% or 0.39% in the previous year. So there is generally a decrease in the growth rate of our sales. Profitability has, however, improved continuously due to improvement in efficiencies within our operations. The return on total assets has also been increasing there's a jump in the final year due to the decrease in the total assets that I highlighted earlier. In terms of general performance, profit margins have gone up to 16%, return on equity is at 15%, and interest cover, because of the drop in the outstanding debt, has also increased to 8.4%, which means we actually have capacity to borrow more money in order to expand our infrastructure and to improve access to water and sanitation in other areas. In terms of return on assets, I've spoken about that. The next line also shows that we have a very good rating from the rating agencies, and that would enable us to access finance if we find it necessary to do so. The last two ratios reflect on our liquidity, really, and we have no problems there. If we look at the current infrastructure projects that we are engaged in, we have a Braamfontein-Hartbeespoort pipeline to supply water to the areas around the Hartbeespoort dam, which might sound a bit crazy because they have water at the dam, but we are supplying water from our current network. Unfortunately, the Hartbeespoort dam doesn't have water that can be purified at reasonable cost to portable standards. So we have to supply from the rest of our network. We have spoken about the dwarf project that we did in Western Haifa. In terms of future capital investment, and this was a view at the end of the financial year, which is a while back, there might be changes now looking at the world with a different set of eyes. But we are expecting to spend 2.9 billion rands in the next 5 years, which would be in our plan to dwarf, which we submit on an annual basis. And 57% of that would be augmentation schemes, which is mainly on the distribution network and not on the treatment side of the business. Because in terms of treatment capacity or water treatment capacity, we do not foresee the need to upgrade or to do a serious augmentation until 2012 to 2015, where there might be a need to do minor augmentations depending on the growth of our sales. However, on the distribution side, due to the change in settlement patterns, we do need to augment our system to supply new areas. One of the areas that is experiencing some distress is on the east of Tswane, and also on the western side of the Johannesburg municipality and around the Mogale city area. So we, from time to time, have to augment those pipelines and the supply network, either by putting up additional lines or expanding our reservoir capacity. Another area of growth is around Rustenburg, where we have just completed an additional reservoir. Renovations make up about 43% of our planned expenditure, and this is to really make sure that our major pipelines are capable of sustaining our supply for the next 20, 30 years. I might have touched on some of these areas. Blackfontein-Mamelodi pipeline, 370 million rand. Welsenfrieden reservoir is on the western side of Johannesburg, and that's 60 million rand. The PG3 pipeline is to augment our ability to abstract more water from the Vaal dam. And it's the two systems that will ultimately be there at the end of the construction of PG3 are supposed to help us meet the demand around 2009-2010. So that is going to cost 180 million rand. Dwarkopis forest hill system, this supplies the center of Johannesburg and we are running on the edge at the moment, and we battled in the last few weeks with high demand, but we are planning to put an additional pipeline there at 140 million rand. Looking back internally, in terms of composition of our workforce or our employees, we, in terms of female empowerment or women empowerment, we have an overall employment of 23% of our employees being female or women at the end of 2005-2006 financial year. Management on the other side was slightly better at 28%, and at the relative level we are 50%, which means we have started at the right point, and hopefully that will carry the momentum in terms of improving gender equality or gender distribution within the company. In terms of racial equality, we are, or employment equity in terms of ACIs, we're at 63% in management, which is quite good. And commercial equity spend was at 60% of total discretionary spend at the end of the financial year, and that was 29% up on the previous year. We spent 8.5% on payroll, of payroll on training, which is pretty high for any organization worldwide. In terms of learnership, we also employed previously disabled people with disabilities. We have 20 of them whose employment was facilitated through the CETA. They are on learnership, and we hope to employ some of them at the end of their learnership. Currently, we are sitting on 3.9% of total staff as people with disabilities. We also have bursary schemes as well as chairs at tertiary institutions, which helps us with improving our recruitment of skilled employees in the engineering and scientific field. We have apprenticeships which are largely composed of female employees, and we also have a significant HIV AIDS program. This just gives us an overall view of total number of employees, which has been decreasing through natural means, and we're now just about 3,000 employees, and the amount of water we're pumping per employee has been increasing as our volume goes up. We also are ISO accredited in terms of quality, environment, and safety. And we also have labs that are accredited through the ISO system, and we're one of the few in South Africa. In terms of corporate social responsibility, we facilitated the disbursement of 45 million or 46 million rand of external funds, and of that amount we spent 13 million rand with local suppliers in the areas that we worked in. I'll show you just now where we had projects. And we also spent about 9 million rand on labor. And our employment in this project was 54%, composed of 54% women. And there was a total of about 1,400 jobs that were created in the period. The areas that we worked in was in Winterfeld, where we reinstated a pipe at a cost of 5.3 million rand, the water pipes, and we also did sanitation projects that accounted for about 5.5 million rand. We also have projects that deal with nature conservation, mainly removal of alien plants and along river basins. And in Mukhale City, we spent 1.3 million rand, Ilandsfontein 1.5 million rand, etc.
We also did projects in terms of leak repairs in Mpuleni, which cost about 1.9 million rand, and in Tswane, which cost about 1.5 million rand. We also did projects in Westland rehabilitation amounting to 1.37 million rand. Now moving to our subsidiary, which is Rand Water Services. It has a project in Ghana. It won a project in Ghana to manage the Ghana Water Company's assets to produce water for people in Ghana, the whole of Ghana. This is in a joint venture with Vitens of the Netherlands. They hold 51% of the partnership and we hold 49%. And this is over 5 years and is financed by the World Bank. So we are merely providing expertise and management to the Ghana Water Company. And the project is going on well. It started in June last year and we are still going through with the contract, and we've had good feedback from the Ghana Water Company as the client. Rand Water Services also supplies technology to inspect water pipelines, to check integrity of concrete pipelines as well as steel pipelines, so that you can have targeted maintenance programs. And they also have technology of fixing defects on the pipeline. They have supplied that service to municipalities in Cape Town. There's a project that is nearly underway. They've also done a big project at Umgeni, and they also have done a few projects around the Gauteng area with different municipalities. They are also looking at an infrastructure development fund that will focus on water projects, both in South Africa and externally in the SADC area. And that is to make sure that we can fund most of the needs for improvement of infrastructure in the water sector in the region. Moving to current challenges, which some of them are still there, is attracting, developing and retaining leading edge water skills in the water services, improving internal performance management, engaging meaningfully with government on service delivery, especially around catchment management on the Vaal River system, deliver on water and sanitation targets within our supply area as well as beyond our supply area. And we have some projects that we are now looking at in those areas, and we are going to accelerate that through a focused project to move into the future. We are also looking at how we can support NEPAD initiatives in the SADC region and broader in Africa in the water sector. And there are some projects that we are looking at in that area. We want to engage with customers on a full suite of water services. We've largely been in bulk water supply, but we want also to engage on bulk sanitation as well as in demand management. We currently have projects that are running in Mkhale City on demand management, as well as with the Johannesburg municipality, where we've been working on reduction of water, of unaccounted for water. And we've had some successes which we can share if we have more time. Finally, we just want to state where we want to get to. We want to be industry leader and partner of choice in sustainable water services in Africa by 2011. So our ambitions really go beyond just South Africa, and we have to have plans that can deliver on our ambition. I would like to thank you.
Thank you very much, Luke. We'll have to see you in the follow-up. Next question, please.
Madam Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, PDBs, managers from the DWARF, and my colleagues from other water institutions. As always, we welcome the opportunity to share with you Blue Water's performance, and in particular in the year under review, because I believe we've made significant strides in addressing some of the challenges highlighted in the previous financial report. The details of which will be covered in the overview. We continue to strive at improving industrial relations with labor and putting in place mechanisms to achieve our transformation targets, as well as other targets we've set out for ourselves of ensuring Blue Water sustainability going forward. I have with me our new CE Memories, who we appointed in December 2006 after a very, very rigorous recruitment process. Memories will be presenting the overview of Blue Water's annual report and highlight some of the key achievements in the year under review. I also have with me our CFO, Mr. Otis Stutz, who will assist in responding to the questions from the floor. I won't take up too much of your time because all the details are contained in Memories' presentation. So over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and honourable members. Also, to observe the Chairperson has done the necessary introduction. Just a recap on Blue Water's service area. As you are aware, we provide bulk water services in central and southern sea states with a number of additional contracts in respect of implementing and operations and maintenance contracts with specific municipalities that go beyond bulk water. Perhaps just some statistics. In comparison to Rand Water, we obviously a baby with 500 kilometres of bulk water distribution pipes as opposed to 3,000 some odd. Very specifically, our 8-hour complement, which has been fairly steady at 212 personnel. We have over 32, we have 32 reservoirs with 8 treatment plants. If I can, just from the board's perspective, give a sense of what the board is focused on in the 05-06 financial year. Through the Association of Water Boards governance training for newly appointed board members, together with, given that it was the first, first term in office, concentrating quite a bit on the shareholders' compact and policy statements, which has resulted in us being PFMA compliant and policy reporting compliant in a whole load of respects. The board focused very specifically or started focusing on the institutional reform process on and where it should mean regaining as a water board in the process. In this regard, we've worked with provincial draft and some of the municipalities who are either about to or have in fact engaged in Section 78 processes. The board has also determined its strategic objectives and very in particular has re-looked at policies in order to keep abreast of changes in the legislative field and to address challenges with implementation. Noteworthy is the development of our environmental policy, which we look to giving full effect to in the coming year. The quantifying of risk was important both from a financial and just a strategic perspective from the board in terms of mitigating risk strategically and operationally. And then the one big issue, as the chairperson has already mentioned, was paying attention to labour relations, which has been of some concern for some time. Operationally, besides ensuring that we stay within the annual budget that has been approved by the board, giving effect to the operation and maintenance schemes which we run both as agents for municipalities as well as on our own behalf, providing services in areas such as the Modder and Caledon River at our own expense. This relates by and large to flood damage and the like. In relation to catchment management areas, none has been established in our area, so that hasn't been a focus. But we have worked water services, water user associations in attempting to address some of their water challenges. Similarly, in relation to CAPEX, there's ongoing review of our CAPEX spend within the terms of our board's approvals, as well as reporting on our CAPEX spend. Chair, for the purposes of going through the balance sheet, the only thing that I think it needs to be noted is that under property, plant, and equipment, there's been a revaluation of assets in terms of the international finance and reporting standards, which we complied with, and as you see the big changes in figures, that's what we've meant to address. Just the financial statement highlights, obviously approved by the Board of Directors from our external auditors' report. The opinion given is that we are going concern. We have no qualifications, and this is a good welcome and sets us back on track as has been the case in prior years. Brief summary on major achievements from a financial perspective, the fact that the solvent liquid and a going concern. From an operational perspective, the fact that we sit on sound agreements in relation to transfer of assets from GRAF, as well as in respect of agreements with our clients, which we give respect to the Mangaung local municipalities, one such client. We have a number of implementing agency agreements, and I've just listed them for information purposes, which effect was given to you in the prior financial year, and the concomitant amounts in respect of those projects are listed. We've also done a number of projects for GRAF, very specifically provincial as well, and the Department of Provincial Housing and Local Government. From an operation and maintenance agent perspective, we provide services on behalf of Mangaung Local Municipality in the Tabanchu area, as well as in the Eastern Cape for the Ukasamba District Municipality. And those are the highlights of the over and above our bulk water services agreement. We've also been awarded one of the top 500 companies by the professional the PMR award. Just in Chair, I'm running through, conscious of time, but you can stop me at any time if you think I'm going on nothing to show you. Mechanisms put in place to achieve or strengthen our service delivery, very specifically provided technical assistance to one of our clients, Kopanong Local Municipality, by stationing an engineer there to assist with unaccounted for water. We've been intensively involved in the Yafa-Fontein water supply project, which is a massive project. It's implemented, and we sit as part of a task team, as it were. Through the University of the Free State, we have a study chair, which is coming very useful in assisting us very particularly with water quality issues. And through the Controlled University of Technology, we've assisted in the development of many students, some of whom are employees within Bloom Water. On the international perspective, through funding from a Norwegian funder, we've been able to engage through a twinning agreement with the Water and Sewage Authority of Lesotho and the Northern Region Water Board of Malawi. We've got one of our employees stationed in Lesotho and one of Malawi's engineers who has been extremely helpful stationed in the water. In the Yanda review, we've also completed our 06-07 strategic plan with the board, and now in the process of completing our policy statements and business plans, which are due for submission. A highlight on the strategic objectives, positioning Bloom Water as a leading service provider in the water industry, supporting useful water service delivery objectives. Kopanong is one example which I should say, satisfying customers both internal and external and ensuring our financial viability. These strategic plans have also been met with detailed operational plans with targets, timeframes, and reporting. But I think it's important to note that we recently decided in view of our very immediate challenges to go back to the operational plan, as well as some of our strategic objectives and aligning more closely with some of GLAD's flagship projects, very specifically the empowerment of women. And we need to see that running through as a development item through our entire strategic objectives. From a challenges perspective in the year under review, I think this has been the case with most water boards, the debtor situation with local municipalities. We're also faced with a siltation problem at one of our dams, and we are in fact working with that on the issue, and seems to say that we're getting a lot of assistance in that regard. The implementing an operational and maintenance agents agreement, as I've mentioned, and then just continuing to work on our intergovernmental relations with that regional office, which to date has been extremely positive. That shouldn't be under a challenge. Chair, I think I'll leave it there and we'll spend more time on questions.
Thank you very much, Lum. Thank you, CCPA. Thank you, Grant. I trust we need to do justice with your report, mindful of getting into lunchtime. In fact, we are in lunchtime already. Can I ask the members for guidance in their questions? If we hold this over so after lunch, of course, it will be a bigger trouble. So I'll ask you to do what you normally do at that each day. The moderate this time. Beautiful, Masala. It's such a beautiful smile you're giving me. What does that mean?
Okay, let's go for lunch then.
Any questions from the members of the side? No, members, if we hold this over to after lunch, there are six others waiting, and when it gets to 7 o'clock, you're not going to want to sit here to be on the temple.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the three presenters. This is good to have three entities with CC in pretty good financial shape and doing what they're supposed to, so congratulations to them. CCTA, you mentioned the deficit over, which is actually decreased from 2004-2005, and that reflects a shortfall in covering interest. Can you just explain why that happens? It's related to the water tariff and the food as opposed to the increased tariff. Are you satisfied though that will pay off your debt if you provide you debt? And in Rand Water, you've got much capital expenditure planned, but you don't seem to have a problem like most other entities with capacity. Is that so? If it's not, if you do have capacity problems with your capital expenditure, would you like to tell us how you're going to get around that? And so I have no questions for you. Thank you.
Man is on the working for water project. I just want to find out if this working for water project, all the waters are temporary or and the second one is on the job creation.
it didn't mention anything about people with disabilities. I don't know if you...
Let me try to correct the beauty of red water. But in the near future, the handouts that we're having and the presentation must be the same, because we're trying to follow you in very difficulty. So we're jumping from one place to another. I think that you need the next meeting to provide us to correct the line. My question is in regards to the problem that you raised in regards to the single way. What is here to me? What are the political problems? Maybe if you can clarify to us what it is. And if my memory is just correct, when there was the outbreak of cholera at Delmas, there was a suggestion that the land water needs to assist Delmas in regards to supplying of water, because the groundwater around Delmas is giving some problems. Can you clarify to us how far you
there was at some stage 30 million which was a doubtful debt that you had. I just want to know what have you done to address that problem. And the corrective steps which you have taken in that, after the result of the forensic investigation.
From my side, in looking at the reports of all three, Bloom, you get 10 marks for putting a nice compact little report together, 6 marks for the content, RAND on the technical quality of your report, 10 marks as you invited me to come and have a discussion with yourself, and I can see you followed the discussion, and you took to heart the conversation that we had achieved. Also, thank you very much. The content that you have in the report, and this is not because RAND is the biggest, I don't want anyone to misunderstand me. It's they made it their duty to ask me to come and explain to them why are we saying what we are saying in changing the content. So then 10 marks for that one, 6 marks for the 50. So what's the other one? 258. I'm totally intimidated with that, so I'm not anything. Just the last, very last questions, and you don't need to answer all of them. I would like to know your views also on what we asked yesterday, and that is, what do you think are the solutions with the debt problem with the municipality? And then also, what do you say, what discussions have your organization, I'm talking to all three, what discussions have your organization have with the realities of what has happened out there and the effect that it's having on the board? There are changes in Corrective, and I'm asking this, Rand, we noticed in your report, you tell us that there's been quite a huge increase in the amount of water that you have supplied in the financial year. We're obviously interested to know, what does that mean? Does it mean that, you are attending to the required needs that are in that particular area, particularly in meeting the targets that are set? It is an issue that we would like to engage a little bit more with the board, because we are worried if you look at the amount of the increases in volumes and in many instances decreases we then worry, how are we going to make the target or not, particularly supplied through bulk. So can I ask the three boards to also take into consideration the plan time and answer in a moderate way also? Now there are two more hands that don't want lunch.
No, with Bloom Water, just a correction, that it is not central, it's central in the rest of the area that we are referring. As I noticed, the center is a control in the rest of the area. And on page 6, there's something that I would like to say. The second last bullet there, it says social monitoring has revealed that social relationships between important citizens and local residents can result in social health impact. Can you answer that?
I thought you were going to ask what are they doing about the fact that the Free State has got the highest amount of the buckets in the area. You can ask
me. Mine is to command red water with the expertise it seems to have. And ask if it is not possible for them to second some of their members to some of our municipalities which are not doing well capacity-wise. Charity begins at home. If they go as far as Ghana, perhaps we should start from our place here. Our aiding municipalities as far as capacity is concerned.
Thank you, Chair.
DG for reasons is absolutely shaking her head on that question, and she says, I can read her mind, she says she's waiting for a date to meet with all of you to respond to her about that question in the affirmative.
Respond to the three issues that were raised by some of the members. One is on the Working for Water program. Yes, you are correct in that the employment is on a fixed term basis. However, there's two initiatives which we are doing to try and mitigate that. One is we were taking the contractors so we don't just employ them for a certain period of time and then and the workers and then just never see them again or don't engage with them again. We kind of rotate the workers. That's obviously to increase the maximize employment. Then also the training that has been undertaken and funded by the Bergwater Project is wider than just the operational requirements for them to do their work. The second aspect is the disabilities. The one is that what are we doing in that regard? We do monthly monitoring and reporting on how we're doing in terms of employing people with disabilities. We've also got a local community committee, which we call the Employment and Training Committee. On that committee, we have an NGO, which is specifically serving on that committee, looking after the interests of people with disabilities. On this committee, you have all our contractors represented, TCA, our engineer. So we do that reporting, and there's also an NGO serving in that regard. We've also made a concerted effort to encourage our contractors to employ people with disabilities, and we have seen some steps being taken by the contractors in that regard. On the third point, which is around the health and well-being, we've picked up that that we have raised a concern around social relationships. I just want to point out, in terms of the context of which this project is taking place, we've got 438 non-local workers in the area. Of that, about 28% of those workers are men who have travelled into the area without their families and partners, and obviously
what we have picked up is that that can create problems in terms of unwanted pregnancies and any health-related diseases that may go with that. So there are initiatives that we're implementing to mitigate those negative social impacts.
And then on the other two questions, number one is on the deficit, where it's reducing, it should be reducing because we're getting to the peak of what we call the gangster. Whether the tariffs over the period of the will create enough money to repay debt, yes, we are sure of that because we have actually a modeling process to make sure that we break even, it's a break even model. Then the second aspect relating to maybe sharing some thoughts, although we do not function in the water services area, relating to the realities of where we sit with the debt problems with municipalities. I believe these contractual agreements on the provider of water, bulk water, between water boards and municipalities is one key element to be able to manage that. Secondly, we need to have a debate probably with National Treasury and with DKLG about how equitable share can be made differently applicable and maybe can be ceded towards paying for that water, because that is really a portion of that is applicable to be able to make sure that you look at water or the supply of water and the delivery of water. But I believe it is the policy debate that we need to have. And then just lastly, the reality of what's happening today. And on CCTA's impact, I think that will come back when we talk about institutional reform and water resources. But on water boards, I do believe that there is a greater need for us to start to look at wider regional water delivery. And I do think that the whole institutional reform process that's currently undertaken by the Department of Water Affairs maybe should be sped up, because I know there's a lot of consultation that's taking place within that, but I think we might lose the opportunity to deliver services to the people on the ground, and local government and water boards should maybe work differently together on that.
Very much in consultation with Rand and Bloom, they'll give us quick answers after lunch. We'll join us in the old assembly for lunch again. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you at 5:02.